Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chods. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your host, it's Mark and Jamie.
So hello and welcome to episode 78 on this gloriously sunny bank holiday, August bank holiday weekend. How are you today, Mark?
Oh, fine. Just looking out the window at this lovely weather over here in Yorkshire as well. And I'm wasting it right now. So I'm just sat here in the living room in my pants waiting to finish this. So I might get a little 10-foot stalking rod out and drive around a few other local gaffs and see if I can nab a fish before the bailiffs nab me.
Well, rather than wasting it, most people on August bank holiday just get wasted on it. But, yeah, that's
a bit of experience.
Yeah, well, Friday night we went out. Oh, no, it was Saturday, sorry. We should have gone out Sunday because Will Smith and Jazzy Jeff did their only UK gig on the front in Blackpool on Sunday night, and it was absolutely amazing, judging by all the videos and stuff I've seen.
Would have actually been quite good if they played all some of the old school stuff.
He played it all, yeah. They played all the Getting Jiggy With It, Miami, Summertime. You forget how many big hits he had. And obviously Fresh Prince. Jazzy Jeff is amazing. I've seen him DJ a few times over the last, I don't know, 5 years. And he's just really good. He's just a typical. So we've seen the like American scratch DJs where they play like 30 seconds of a really well-known track like The Hook, and then it's scratched and cut into 30 seconds of another really well-known song. And they do it for like 2 hours solid, and it's just hypes the crowd because you like know every track, just all big stuff. And Jazzy Jeff's one of the best at that. He's an extremely good DJ. So yeah, them together, well, I didn't see it, I could hear it from my house, but Blackpool seems to have pulled the finger out with the council with entertainment recently. They built this big area called the Comedy Carpet on the beachfront in front of the tower, and they're regularly having festivals and events on there, like all big outdoor events, what they should have done years ago, to be honest. But yeah, it's pretty damn good. They've had 3 festivals on this weekend. They set up a huge stage, you know, like the big stage at any sort of festival, like the main stage type thing. Yeah. Like a massive thing. It's all sheltered from the sea. They have like these wind barriers up. It's pretty smart being outside on the front. It's quite a nice atmosphere. You ever see Fatboy Slim or videos of it when he did Brighton Beach like years ago? You ever see videos of that?
Like, I've not seen that. No, I'm not one of his number one fans, if I'm honest.
No, well, it was the Fatboy Slim one was pretty incredible because he did a free party on the beach. Like, I forget if it was a bank holiday, but it was on a summer weekend anyway. And basically, most of the entire country decided to turn up for this free party, and I think somebody died. It was crazy. It's all on DVD, you can watch it on YouTube, but I think something like 280,000 people turned up because it was a free party. It was crazy, like all the aerial cameras and stuff you can see. There's people climbing up lampposts and sitting on the top of lampposts and stuff to watch. It went crazy anyway. It was I don't think they realised that everybody in the country went, oh, let's go to Brighton for the weekend and go to a free party. Anyway, this Blackpool one's certainly not free, but it did remind me of that. The beach was just lined, like about 20,000 people there were, I think, there last night for the Will Smith one. It was pretty good. On Friday they had... who was it Friday night? I forget. Saturday was... Remember Pete Waterman, Hitman and Her?
Remember
the Hitman and Her? Yeah, well, he had all the sort of acts in the 80s. It was called The Hit Factory, was the name of his sort of label, and he had, like, Jason Donovan and Sunita and all them sort of people. Anyway, it was him hosting it, and all them were on... Roger's trying to ring me again. I rang Roger Bacon for one of our new features, the 10 questions with various anglers. He didn't answer back, and he's now rung me 3 times in the 5 minutes we've been on air.
Can you answer it and you record what he says straight off?
Or
is that possible?
Yeah, it's possible. If he rings again, I'll answer it then. I'll have to set up a new window because that'll be on the phone and we're recording Skype. Let's not get technical, but yeah, probably can if he rings again.
Yeah. Mind, what about these gigs? You know, where I live, it's, you know, there's a crow fly, it's not a million miles away from the Yorkshire Wildlife Park. Do you know what they had there the other night? You can keep your Will Smith and all these. We had Peter Andre.
Oh, yes.
Yes, I was getting my taco ready in the garage and could hear a mysterious girl in the distance.
I want to know what you're doing with your tackle, to be honest. But
definitely not when I listen to Peter Andre. But do you know what, free gig? This is, you know, I don't think it was a free gig, but it reminds me of something. This is going back quite a while now. But I get a phone call from a fellow I used to work with, and to be honest, he was a boring bastard, so I just ignored it. And I get another two missed calls, so I just ignored him. I just thought, really can't be bothered with speaking to you. And I bumped into him about 3 weeks after, and you know, when you see someone face to face, you can't really ignore him. So he exchanged pleasantries, and he was telling me, oh, I was trying to contact you a couple of weeks back. I had a spare ticket to go see Motorhead. They were doing a gig in Sherwood Forest.
And yeah,
I'd have put up with him for that. That would have been great.
Does he listen to the podcast?
No, he's not a fisherman. He's fishing's way too interesting for him.
Yeah, so that's what's going on Bank Holiday weekend. Part of our 10 questions, actually, we've been asking various guests just to feature that we're doing. There's a quick fire five in the middle of it. Our Sarah should have done me jingles this week. She promised me on Saturday, but they haven't arrived. So we'll have to improvise. I'll get my jingle voice on again. We could do the questions with you as well if you want.
I think we did do a little bit last week. We spoke a little bit about the music last week. You know what? I think what you've seen on Catfeed have been asking people.
Yeah, I remember speaking about. Yeah, well, we've got 10 questions, five of them, quick fire. Could you do the quick fire ones with you right now if you want? Should we dive straight in?
Yes, I'll brace myself. I'm ready. Fire away.
Straight point or beaked point hooks?
Oh, straight point every time.
Pop up or bottom bait?
Both.
Stick or bag?
Both, but technically a stick is in a bag.
Braid, mono or fluoro for your main line?
Usually mono, but I'm actually on braid at the minute. And I'm getting used to it.
And the same question for your hook link?
Braid, coated braid.
And lead arrangement, inline, clip or heli chod?
Oh, clip firm. Probably 85-90% of the time, and inline's the rest.
Thank you, Mark, for your quick fire five. Or whatever, she's going to come back with a jingle.
We need a better jingle than that.
I just checked my emails, it wasn't there, so I will chase old Sarah. She's very busy these days. She does the Drive Time show now on Capital Liverpool. If you're ever in the Liverpool area and listen to Capital Radio at evening time, or Drive Time, you will hear our jingle girl. Sarah Story is her name, if you wish to stalk her. And she's definitely worth stalking.
Well, you've just said you're going to chase her about. That's pretty similar.
I've done it for 10 years, don't worry.
Does Rachel know about that?
She's out walking the dog. The dog, yes.
You've got a dog, you've got a carp dog.
We finally got a carp dog, yeah. We went to the rescue centre last week. Looked at a few dogs. Nothing was really suitable. There was one that looked all right, but he was a bit crazy. Probably a little bit bigger than what he wanted, and he was pretty crazy. And just before we were about to go, we spent an hour or two there and walked a few of them and stuff. And just before we went to go, they went, what about a Jack Russell? We had one come in, like, literally 2 days ago. And we were like, yeah, Jack Russell is a well-known carp dog.
A little yappy fuck.
Yeah, well, you would think that, but it sort of ticks the boxes. I mean, he brought this dog out. This dog is literally the most loving dog I've ever seen. He's ace. He's got an ace personality. He only barks when you leave him. He's really good. I actually took him fishing this week. Like, we'd had him 2 days. I took him up to Nash's. I had a trip on there with a few lads. Heapy Bob came with us. Alistair, shout out to Alistair and Lee, some great lads. We had a good week. Fishing was awful, but I took the dog. Is Roger phoning you now because he can't get hold of me?
No, that's the wife. She just phoned me mobile and I've ignored it, so she's phoning the house, so I'm going to ignore that while we're recording. But I have messaged her, so I'm not just totally abandoning her.
Well, hopefully the message goes through quick and she puts the phone down. There you go.
Yeah.
Oh no, she's not ready yet.
No, she'll get the hint. She knows her role.
So yeah, fishing was awful. We'll talk about that. Now Roger's just texted me saying I called you, but it's cutting out. That's because I pressed the button three times and texted you to tell you why I pressed the button. So yes, back to the carp dog. So yeah, Nash is, it's all pretty secure up there. He's got a small dog. Ridge is his dog that runs all about, so they've made it fairly dog proof. You know, there's fences up everywhere and the dogs can't really come to any harm. So yeah, I took our dog and he was absolutely great. The only time he barked was when you tried catapulting or firing out some bait because he wanted to chase it. He thought it was a game. Yeah, cause he's quite playful, but yeah, he's an ace dog. He's got such a good nature. He'll sit on anybody's lap. Soon as anyone's first time of meeting him, come up and they sit down to chat, and he's straight on the lap, head on them, and just goes to sleep. He sleeps when you want to sleep. He's warmer than a hot water bottle. The only thing is, he tries to burrow in your sleeping bag. He doesn't like sleeping on top of it. He wants to get in it every night.
That's something to keep your feet warm on at night.
Yeah, so little Louis, we finally have a carp dog. I'm going to get him a passport, so I can take him abroad.
Let me go. What did you say? He's called Louis.
Little Louis, yeah.
Where's that name come from?
Little Louis is actually a part of the Masters at Work, or a house DJ team. But we inherited the name Louis, and he's small, so he's Little Louis. What happened with him? I mean, this dog is one of the nicest, healthiest dogs I've ever seen. Its owners had taken him to the vet to have him put down, and the vets wouldn't put him down because he was such a healthy dog. And they basically rang the homeless hounds in Blackpool and said, "Will you take him?" And they said, "Okay." And he'd been there like 2 days, so I don't think he's had any trauma for a rescue dog. I just think somebody didn't want him anymore, or maybe a couple had split up or something and couldn't decide who kept him. And I don't really know the story, but thanks to the vet for not putting down such an ace dog, and we were very lucky, I think, to have gone in there and got him without him sort of getting traumatised in a dog's home or whatever. Yeah, so I think the dog's pretty lucky. He's got a loving family, and we're extremely lucky to have such a nice dog. So yeah, got a carp dog, and I will be trying to get the Ed Betteridge shot now. Well, that's the one, isn't it?
Have you seen it where he's in the water with that 50 and I think it looks like a little Batterdale or Terrier of some descriptions come out to investigate.
Yeah, it's an ace picture, and that's the goal now. I want the 50 pounder in front of the Lake Bled Church, and I want a nice chunk, nice pretty looking fish with the dog in the water. That's my life goals with the photographs, I think. So a little bit of news there. It wasn't an on the net, but it was a bit of news. We've got a few on the net, haven't we, Mark?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah, we have. Should we start with a nice positive one for a change?
Go on.
Yeah. Chilli's had his operation. He's had his tumour removed. It's all good. He's back home and he's on the mend.
Fantastic. Shout out to Chilli. I've seen a picture of him standing up and around. There's some whopping scar he's got on his head, haven't they? They look like they had to take quite a bit of it open or out. Yeah. But yeah.
He's got like a zip across his skull. But if you're reading Chilli's status, he's made himself. He's all gone to plan. His staples are out and I'm sure he's looking forward to being sat behind his buzzers. Well, I can only imagine what the feeling will be. You know, after having gone through all that, when he finally gets back to the car fishing that he loves, and that alarm screams off with a belted run for the first time back.
Yeah, it's a bit of realisation. I think the success rate on that operation is not super high. which is, you know, that big post he made, sort of fearing the worst, was not because he was, it was because the facts are it's a pretty involved operation, I think. I know this because a DJ that we know, shout out to Pete Zorba, he's had exactly the same thing recently, and again he's made what looks like a full recovery. He was in Ibiza with us DJing a few months back when we all went, and he had a significant portion of his brain removed. It was something, I forget the percentage, but like 30% or something. It was a chunk, and seemed pretty fine, to be honest, which I think you're lucky if you come out the other side of it. And it seems like Chilly is. If he's making posts himself on Facebook, then it looks like he also too is thankfully on the mend. So yeah, we wish you all the best from what must have been a horrible ordeal. Yeah, shout out to Chilly. Something else on the net, Mark. Bluebell, have you seen this?
Yeah, I've seen it. As I said earlier, before we started, I've not really gone too deep in the comments, but you know, Bluebell Lakes have put the prices up, not by much, I don't think.
£2.50.
The world has ended.
Oh my word! I've seen it on a few of the news sites. I've seen the Bluebell post that they made that's got like 230 replies, and then the more I read stuff like this, you know, and it crops up quite a lot, the more I realise that the majority of people are just stupid. So, like, if you give... The problem is with the internet is stupid people have the same right to reply as people that actually have got, you know, more than one brain cell to rub together inside their head. Some of the comments I've seen, excuse me, are just plain ridiculous. Like, such and such lake is £10. This lake's £15. Oh, I'm going to Linear because it's £5.50 cheaper. I mean, they've put it up £2.50. Now, I'm not saying it was the smartest post in the world. When you make a post like that, you're going to get the negativity. You're going to get the people go, all right, that's it, I'm never setting foot on there again. What, somebody who hasn't put the price up in like 15 years or something crazy? It's a long time since they last put the price up. It was in the Benson days, and it was a super, super expensive lake back then compared to other day tickets, but the price hasn't gone up since, and all the other lakes have caught up. There are many lakes that are £30 a day these days, quite a few, and most of them haven't got three £50-pounders in. And how many 40 commons are there in Kingfisher?
Oh, well, then you can shake a stick at. I certainly wouldn't, mate. Have you seen Lee Birch's catches on there lately?
Exactly, yeah.
So, £50 as well, and they're not just, you know, scabby old simos. There's some belty-looking fish. You'd be happy to have them in your quiet syndicate water, no mind a day ticket accessible to everyone.
Yeah, I think there's over 20 40s in Kingfisher. I don't know how many 40s are in Swan, but I know there's three 50s, including a £50 yeah. common. And, you know,
Dave.
Yeah. There's facilities on there. You know, there's a tackle shop. There's, you know, showers, toilets. I mean, all right, it's still up towards the most expensive, some of the higher end lakes. But I mean, you know, I've got a camper van and I've stayed on campsites. It's £15 a night to stay anywhere. If you want to rent a piece of somebody's land to sleep on, the going rate's about £15, and that's without any fish. You know, that's just camping in somebody's field. It costs money to stay on somebody else's property, and you know, £32.50 is expensive. It's going to be £100 for three nights for three rods, but you know, you don't have to go there. You can drive somewhere else. I know you said you had somebody in your shop, didn't you, moaning that are now going to drive twice the distance to go to Linear to save a fiver.
Yeah, it did kind of make me baffle with that one. They were moaning about the price increase. Now, Doncaster to Bluebell Lake, I've done it a couple of times myself, it's 80-something mile, and Doncaster to Linear is about 160-odd.
Yeah, and we know how much petrol costs. What is it, about £1 every 10 miles, something like that, fuel?
Oh, something daft, yeah. It was, didn't make economical sense.
No.
Although, obviously, when you're working in the shop, you've got to keep your trap shut a little bit. You don't want to upset too many customers.
No, but it's just the mentality. Some of the stuff, like, because people just want to spout shite when they see something maybe they don't like on Facebook. It's basically spitting your dummy out. It's like some, oh, well, the price has gone up £2.50 a rod or whatever it's gone up. Well, it must be to pay for that fire that he had 5 years ago. I forget when the fire was at the house. A lot of it burnt down, didn't it? Which I'm pretty sure would have been covered by insurance for a start. But even if it wasn't, putting your price up 3 years later, is £2.50, is hardly going to build a new house. Let's be honest. But, you know, why would you even say that? Oh, it must be to pay for the fire damage that he had years ago. I mean, it's just plain ridiculous. People just want to spout hateful bullshit every time they get an opportunity on the net. That's what it seems to me. Some people must be so unhappy with their own lives that as soon as they've got something to whinge about, they just get stuck in and bring literally everything else they can think of up in the conversation. Oh, well, should spend it on an otter fence. There's millions of otters around there. So I've seen that comment quite a bit. Now, I don't know the practicalities of otter fence in the complex. I have no idea, but I'm pretty sure the owners priced it because it is near the river.
The river runs right through it, doesn't it?
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know, but I mean, that's a completely different debate. He's put the price up because he's sick of there's been some car damage and there's been people being disrespectful, leaving litter, basically, and now... Maybe it's a knee-jerk reaction. Maybe he wanted to put it up anyway. I don't know. But it looked like quite an angry, emotional post when he made it, as if he'd just, you know, literally found a load of crap and, you know, seen a bit of damage somewhere, whatever, and gone, right, sod you, I'm putting the price up. You know, I did kind of get that impression. But it's his right to put the price up. It's his business, and it's your right as a consumer not to go there if you think it's too expensive. I mean, you know... You remember when Clearwater, who sponsor the Carp Cast, shout out to Alex. Remember when he first announced that he was putting a syndicate on the Jimmy's Lake, and you had to apply for it and stuff, and all the people that basically, I read the comments. I spent an hour reading the comments one day just for jokes to see the ridiculous people were posting. They were cutting their nose off to spite the face. Oh, that's it. Private for him and his mates. I'm never setting foot on the place again. You know, just people posting absolute shite. When Alex, he spent 180 grand on fish, 50 grand on an otter fence. He spent best part of £1 million buying the place, you know. And these guys think they can dictate how they want this place to run. You know, like, let's make it a tenner a day so me and my mates can turn up and don't let anyone on till Friday so I can tip up after work on a Friday and have the pick of the lake. I mean, some of the shite that was getting posted. Some people just don't understand how the real world works. You know, things cost money. It ain't cheap running a complex of lakes. You know, Alex, I know Alex in particular at Clearwater, he certainly hasn't bought that place to make money. He's done it for a bucket list and a dream, and he can afford to do it. You know, it is never, he's never going to get his money back from what he spent. Not in a lifetime of running that lake will he get his money back. And yet other people think they have the right to dictate. This is turning into a Jamie's rant, isn't it?
It is a little bit, yeah. I mean, not really long to say. It does seem there is... You have an element of people who seem to begrudge anyone else actually making any money.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I'm pretty sure there's a few complex of lakes that maybe make a lot of money. People that bought them a long time ago and, you know, maybe have paid the mortgages off and stuff now. And since we've had a carp boom, you know, I'm pretty sure Linear Fisheries makes money. But there are many. Like, it's more of a bucket list thing for people, I think, to own a lake. It's very hard. You know, we know what land prices are and stuff these days, you know.
Yeah. I remember having a chat with Nathan a while back, and, you know, but Cromwell Lakes, you know, what that lake, you know, takes over the year and what, you know, the costs are. And it's not what you think.
No, it's not.
They're not exactly, you know, making millions off it. So. No. But when it comes to the internet, do you think we need more, go to China's role model and control it a bit more and just...
Well, you've got to take an intelligence test before you're allowed to reply to a comment.
Yes, that's it. I think there's a lot of things in this life you need to take an intelligence test for. Voting should be one of them.
Yeah, having babies, that should be another.
That was number two, definitely. You must have been to Doncaster. I do the change run from work to the bank every week, and it's just like dodge the benefit cheats as you walk 100 yards from the car park through the town.
Yeah, let's not get political. But Facebook, it tends to give people that probably shouldn't have an opinion. They think that it's a God-given right to post absolute dribble. Some of the stuff on there, I was just like, oh dear. You know, if you got a point, you think it's expensive, maybe say, I think that's a bit expensive. You know, but, oh, well, it must be to pay for his house that burnt down the other year, you know. Oh, yeah, of course it is. That's been right on his mind, you know, to wait 3 years and then put it up 250. you know what I mean? And it's got, for a day ticket stock, it's got, what day ticket's got 350 pounders in? There aren't many, are there?
I can't think of any off the top of my head. To be honest, there's not many with one.
The same thing happened when Kevin Nash put the Church Lake up. You know, you saw stuff, your overpriced equipment, or just people wanting to spout crap. And I see it on literally every post that posts something that, you know, some people could maybe not find to their liking. But it's your choice. Just don't go there. If you think something's too expensive, I haven't bought a Rolls Royce because I think they're a little bit dear. You know, maybe I should whinge at Rolls Royce just to make them about the price of my van, so I can have one too.
Yeah. Do you remember some of the abuse we got last year when we ran the socials?
Yep.
Well, we did charge a few quid for them. Yeah, we made a couple of quid for ourselves, not masses, to be honest.
No.
But they were fun events. A lot of hard work actually running. We were both absolutely shattered by the end of them. But we still got abuse. Oh, this is a money-making scheme. Oh, do you want it for free? Yeah.
Now, as I've said to anybody, we are happy to give our time. I'm not giving my money for nothing, but I will give my time for nothing. And if you've got a lake near you want to go and pay the 1200 quid, 1500 quid deposit and take the risk of losing that money, you book, fill the swims up, and Mark and I will attend. We'll come and do a carp cat social for someone if they want to organise it. Quite happily, you know, I'm not greedy. I'm happy to meet our listeners and stuff. And I mean, put it this way, we looked at doing a social up at Clearwater this autumn, and we mentioned it on the last show. We've got a page up in the official Carpcast fan page, and we've dropped the price severely just so it covers the swims and the lakes, and covers our expenses. I think we said we'll do it around the 150 quid mark. From like Friday to Monday morning, something like that. And I think we had 7 people say they would do it. So, you know, there's a very high chance that's not going to happen. So, and that's why there's been no socials this year, apart from the fact that the lake up near you, Mark Hycombe, that had contacted us saying, do you want to do one on here? Haven't bothered to reply to the proposal that I sent him. Not talking about Martin, it's the boat club. It's not Martin, who has been in communication all the time. Looked like he was in Ibiza last week as well himself, wasn't he? I saw a few.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he's a good lad, Jacko.
Yeah, he seems sound from the interactions I've had. But the chairman of the boat club didn't bother replying to the offer. Bear in mind, at first we were offered the lake for nothing, then I offered them a grand for the lake, and didn't afford me the courtesy of a reply after a long phone conversation and then confirming everything that I'd said in an email. The trials and tribulations. So if somebody else wants to take on that hassle, by all means do it. Give us a shout, make sure we're free first, and you organise it. But don't whinge when we do it and we charge for our time. This is a rant. I don't mean to be a rant. I'm in a good mood. I'm in a really good mood.
Yeah. Oh, you're ranting. Shall we, on this lovely sunny day. You've seen license sales are down by 17%, the Environment Agency has just told us.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yes, they are. Just one more thing I wanted to say about Bluebell, by the way, a little bit more positive. Is that, did you see the guy that took the, you know, those three little packets of like 5 boilies you get on the front of Carp Talk or on front of magazines sometimes? You ever seen those?
I've seen them, yeah, and discarded every single one, if I'm honest.
Well, don't discard the CC More Equinox, because this guy got 5 free boilies in the little pack on the front. He went to Bluebell and caught a £47 comment on him. Which I thought was ace. The chap was called Mick Skeet. Shout out to Mick, well done. I'm guessing he's going to be using CC Moore Equinox in the future.
If it only takes five boilies, I'll tell you what, that is one hook bait and two bait stringers, so you can have two casts.
Yeah.
That's not quite over baiting. That's a Yorkshireman's way of fishing. I like that.
Do you ever remember the Mistral Rose Hip Isotonic that were really big years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember getting a free pack of like five of them or six or something on. It was actually on Carp Talk. It was in the early 90s. They were catching everything at the time, those fish, those boilies, like the whole of Carp Talk was just full of that bait. And I remember taking them to Rodney Meadow and blanking on them. I was like, I've never used in free boilies again, but I did. I used them. I just didn't catch on them. But yeah, a shout out to Mick Skeets and Straw a Line under Bluebell. It just goes to show what quality fish are in there. And I think he probably would be happy paying his $32.50 for three rods.
Well, you save money on bait. You can afford it.
Yeah. The EA, they've... I find this a very strange post. They seem to have gone to town on this. I've seen this post everywhere saying rod license sales down 17%. You know, and it's been a headline in a lot of things. Well, haven't they just changed the rod license setup so that they're automatically going to sell less rod licenses? Because carp anglers now only have to buy one instead of two if you would like to use three rods. So surely there was going to be a drop. And I would actually say... I would say that more than 17% of the entire license sales are carp anglers. So I would suggest that all the carp anglers in the country buying one rod license instead of two, the drop should have been way more serious, I would have thought.
Yeah, I would have thought so. But I think the true truth behind this had come off the actually release of revenue they'd got from the rod license sales rather than just the numbers.
So how much was a single rod licence? Was it like for the two rods, was it £27.50 or something, £28 around there?
It went up to £30 this year, I believe.
So
£30 for a two rod licence, £45 for your three.
Yeah, so people that were buying two rod licences to use three rods they're now spending less money. They're spending £45 instead of what, £56? Yeah, 56, my maths is not good today. So they've obviously got a slight revenue drop there, but then I'm pretty sure to counteract that there'll be some people that probably risked it, just bought one rod license and only spent the £28 and risked it basically for the third rod, which will now probably have just bought the three rod license. So I'm guessing they'll make a gain there. Like, it swings and roundabouts, isn't it? I mean, my rod license is set up automatically. I do use four rods on some lakes, so I've always had two rod licenses. And mine's set up, I set it up by a direct debit years ago. I don't have to do anything. They just turn up every spring in the post, and they just automatically take the money. And that I still got two this year, even though it had been changed. They didn't ask me if I want to change it, just what I've set up is still in force. So anybody else that had it automatically set up for two rod licenses will probably, unless you've physically gone on and cancelled it and then done a new one, then you're going to have still received your two rod licenses. So I don't know, I don't think the EA would have done it if they didn't think it was a net gain long term, but I would have been more impressed if they released the revenue figures instead of just the number of sales, because I mean it doesn't take a genius to work out that it was going to go down, and I actually think it's gone down less than probably predicted. I don't know why they're trying to spin this. It just seems like negative PR to me. I'm sure you could have put a positive spin on that with releasing more facts. I don't know why they've chosen to do it that way, but
yeah, I think you just hit the nail on the head. They should have released a few more facts to kind of just qualify that statement rather than just half a story.
Yeah, and at the same time, we're seeing people, you know, we're seeing them release that angling's getting another $320,000 boost from fishing license sales. So another $320,000 being made available this summer to the Angling Improvement Fund, the AIF, to support angling facilities, access to and access improvements on rivers and angling venues around the country. So if you're a club or a commercial venue, councils, charities, community organisations, you can apply to, is it the Anglin Trust?
It is the Anglin Trust, yes. I wonder if this goes for otter fencing as well, or is that a separate thing?
I think that's separate, but I know last time we had Rob Hughes on, we need Rob back for Hughes News. We haven't had him for a while. I know he was telling us last time we spoke to him that the Anglin Trust had released another 200 and something grand for otter fencing, which I'm sure is a separate thing. But again, I'm not sure how many clubs know that they can just apply. I mean, there's no harm in implying, is there? You can always say no.
If I had a club, I'd apply, then apply again. Then there's always the other route going down Embryo as well. The Danny Fairross is called, I think.
Yeah, he seems to be. I keep hearing the lakes they've been buying up under the Embryo banner. Seem to be acquiring. What?
That reminds me. I heard the other day this a lake not a million miles away, which I've been told has just come up for lease.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I have fished it, even though it's never actually been properly fishing. This has been a poach, but. The council have always said they only allow two sports on there, and the two that have been on it for almost ever is swimming and sailing. And it was seldom used for either. I've been told it's up for lease. It's just reminded me that. And it used to be years back, there's myself and a friend, we'd go up on our mountain bikes with a rod, and just one rod between them, we'd take to catching fish, and the rope foot and perch in there, it was one a chop, but it was, they were big, talking, like 1-2 pound plus fish every chunk. And, carp followed.
Go check it out. You'd be surprised sometimes. Some of these clubs for local lakes, they don't pay a lot for them. It's certainly be worth checking out.
Yeah, I'm doing that stuff. Well, not this afternoon because it's Bank Holiday Monday, but tomorrow definitely.
EA Anglin Trust. I'm going to get Rob Hughes on there very soon, I think, and maybe he can dig a little deeper into this for us. Talking of Clearwater Fisheries, we did mention what's going on down there. You can still apply for the syndicate. They haven't picked the members yet, and all applications are to be received. clearwaterfisheries.co.uk is the website, and they've got a pretty active Facebook page, lots of pictures of the fish. The fish are going huge. As I said, Alex has spent £180,000 on fish, ones that have already bought and ones for delivery next winter. He's doing a lot of work to the main lake, which is going to be the Keir Syndicate, where he's digging through the lakes. And I actually spoke to Alex last week while he was in Ibiza. Ibiza keeps coming up on this, and why not? Let's get Alex on right now to tell us about the Clearwater Fisheries. So we've managed to finally track you down. It's took a phone call to Spain to actually track you down. Are you in Ibiza, I believe?
I am, thanks, Jamie. Yeah, I've come away from a family holiday, and I booked a new hotel, actually, a Hard Rock Hotel. I think it'd be quite nice for the family, and a bit naive with regards to Ibiza, and it turns out I've got a full-on rave outside of my bedroom every day, so...
Yeah, I went to...
We had 8 hours of crazy house music from sort of 12 till 8 yesterday. The main stage is literally outside of my bedroom, so... it's been a bit of an education for my two girls that are 11 and 12.
starting young into the race. So yeah, I went to a rooftop party in that same hotel with Pete Tong at the International Music Summit, I think it was in May. So yeah, I know it's a pretty lively area of Playa de Embossa and Ibiza down there, so probably not what you're looking for a chill with the family, but
but no, what's quite frightening though is in about 5 or 6 years' time. I would say about 5 or 6 years' time, though, the girls are probably going to be coming back on their own. It's quite frightening.
Yeah, mine's just 17, and she's saying she wants to go to Ibiza next year with her friends for her. I've took her a few times while she's been young, but she's a bit. She's too scared. She won't drink until she's 18. She's very a little bit of a goody two shoes when it comes to breaking rules. very much unlike her dad. She won't even go out and have a drink with me anyway.
That's a good thing, Jamie.
Yeah, definitely. Just hope she doesn't rebel at 18. Oh, I'm allowed to do everything now, so I'm going to do it all. But we'll see. So, Clearwater, it's been not far off a year since you've had the keys, so to speak. I've watched the development with interest. I mean, how's it going from your perspective as owner?
Yeah, it's been fantastic, Jeremy. It's probably every carp angler's dream to ultimately own their own carp lakes. We set out a good couple of years ago trying to find a venue to either lease or purchase. And anyone who knows Northwest carp scene, it's there's not many carp lakes around. So when this hit the market last year, we jumped at the opportunity to try and purchase it. And I've absolutely loved every minute of the last year. It's become my little weekend sanctuary. It reminds me probably very much of my early days and a lot of my friends and the people we're fishing on there, the Wi-Fi complex that got took over by the Birkin family maybe 20 odd years ago. It's a gravel pit lakes, dug out for the motorway. There's an amazing ecosystem from a weed perspective. Lots of natural food in there. There's some really good originals that have grown on. And I think when we took them over, there was a few 30s and a few upper 20s. We've managed to thin out a lot of the sort of biomass and remove some of the smaller stock. And even them old original, sort of the mid-aged originals, I think now, I've grown on massively with some of them. I'd say about 15 of the sort of top fish have all put on 5 pound plus.
Wow.
And obviously we've now got a 43 in there, and about 4 fish now of a 35, of which 2 are big commons as well at 38 and 37. It's gone amazingly. Probably spent a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of helpers. We've got 9 lakes on the site at the moment, and we're netting that down to 4. So we're going to end up with 1 syndicate, sort of 20 odd acres, and 2 day ticket carp venues. It'll be an amalgamation of the other smaller lakes, and 1 stock pond, which we'll use to grow on stock for future generations, future years. Absolutely loving it, Jamie. It's I've done a lot of things in life, and I'd say this has probably been the one I've enjoyed the most, probably the best thing I've ever done.
That's good to hear. I've watched with interest the progression of the fish that you've stocked. See how they've darkened up in the clear water. They look like old English fish that have been in there years now, don't they, in the space of, since last winter?
It's insane, yeah. I mean, we've got one of the lakes at the moment where we're holding the majority of these fish, and we have got very clear water. That's nothing actually to do with why we named the lakes clear water. I've got some other businesses that are all called clear,
right,
with different back names, so it just seemed a logical extension at the time. The fish here, I know there's a big debate about old originals and UK stocked fish heritage, but I'm probably on that heritage side myself, where I'd like to know what I'm fishing for, and I like to fish for history fish, and I like to fish for British fish. So everything we bought in, we took a lot of time picking the stockists, and we picked 2 stockists that we're very, very pleased with, and we've bought fish from sort of 10 to mid-20s, but the majority being the sort of smaller size with a view to growing them on in their own environments. So, yeah, of course. I think I've got the privilege of being the only one that's fishing the stock pond now and again, bar 1 or 2 others, and we're just fishing it to see how the fish are growing and how they're changing. And God, they have changed, haven't they? I mean, yeah, they went in as they almost look foreign because they've been grown in muddy ponds, so they're very light in colour.
Yeah,
now they've all darkened off like old warriors. So I quite often wander down on a Sunday, stand on my stock pond, and look down at hundreds of these submarines that have all darkened off. Yeah, and I can't wait for next year when we merge this stuff into the main lake.
That's the bit I'm excited about, because for people that don't know, if you can picture it, as a fairly Jimmy's Lake, which is going to be called Keir, it's the Keir Syndicate, is quite a large lake as it is, maybe 18 acres or something, and then there's it's surrounded by smaller lakes around it. And what you're going to do is the lakes that are behind it, you're going to knock through, which will create an island essentially, and a much, much bigger lake, allowing the fish to all get into the same area, the stock pond fish. And I'm excited about that. It's just going to make an already good lake great, I think, and just much more interesting, more margins. You've got the islands, got a long chuck to the island, a short chuck to the island. It just, from a carp angler's perspective, it looks like it's going to be ace.
Yeah, it should be, and I think me too, that's obviously going to be our jewel in the crown, and hopefully something in the next 5 and 10 and 15 years will become a lake that everybody wants to fish and becomes the pride of the Northwest, or alongside perhaps a couple of the other ones. You've got the Manchester Park Lake, obviously Wye, and a few others. But yeah, the reason we chucked all the stock in the back lake, it was actually a guy we know is called Pete Plummer. It was his suggestion, actually. We put them all in the very back lake, all the stocking, just to make sure that if we had any stocking issues, with diseases and stuff, it wouldn't necessarily kill off or impact our old originals in the main lake.
Yeah.
And we're glad to report, as we got through winter and spring this year, whilst we did lose a few of the older stock through spawning issues, we haven't had any issues disease wise. So obviously when we do dig through, touch wood, we're fairly confident that there shouldn't be any stocking issues with the stuff that the big fish we've got in there already.
Yeah, and it's just going to make the lake so interesting. Obviously, the lake's going to be extremely well stocked. The fish will have already acclimatised, going to be catching nice, sort of rich coloured fish from the off. But tell us, you've done quite a bit of work to the day ticket lake, which is always going to be accessible, even if you're not interested in the syndicate ticket. You've extended it a little bit. You're going to extend it a bit more, I believe. Is that all still happening?
It is, yeah. We're still waiting for some planning permissions to drop through during September. Typical county councils, they actually close in August, all of their planning committees,
right.
So they reopen again in September, so a bit of a delay there, but and I think it's hopefully going to be one of the exciting things about what we're doing up at Keir is, although it is a commercial fishery, we're not running it to make huge amounts of money, we're just running it to cover its costs, and hopefully plough some of the money and the income that it will generate in the future back into the fishery, and that includes two of the day ticket lakes. Yeah, so we've got one at the moment called was called Fingals, now called Kellets. Yeah, that's getting merged with another lake to the north of it. We've stocked about 150 stocked new stock fish on top of another probably 50 to 100 originals in there. And then we've got another lake called Dewhurst that's probably got higher stocking levels again of smaller fish, carp. Then we're going to dig that into two other lakes, Last Blast and The Burn, and that's going to be called Kent's Bank. And again, that'll be, so we'll end up with two day ticket waters of probably 5-6 acres each.
Yeah.
And one's going to be very much a runs water, that'll be the Kent's Bank. So you play as a fisherman, people just want to do 12, 24 hours, but catch multiple fish. Then you'll have Kellets as a day ticket venue that will be a little bit harder, but hopefully still, be able to turn up on a 48-hour session and catch a few. And then obviously you're going to have the syndicate that's going to be limited membership. But obviously people are visiting our day ticket lakes and get to know us. We'll have an opportunity as places come available in the future to get into that syndicate. Which is going to be much more, based on specimen angling and larger fish. No, it's all right, mate. So, yeah, from a carp fishing perspective, we should have sort of something from everybody, for the sort of new beginners and people that just want to get a line wet and catch a few, to more serious carp anglers on a day ticket, and then obviously through to a syndicate.
It sounds perfect. And the facilities up there seem to be second to none. You've got a fantastic restaurant. You've employed one of my favourite chefs who used to work at another lake that we know, which is John. How's that side of it going? Are we likely to see a bar or functions or anything up there soon?
No, I'm not. We might do in the future. Immediately, we're just putting plans in to extend the sort of cafe bistro area. So we're going to put sort of an out. We've got a large decking area anyway. We're going to look to put some sort of modern glass balustrading around all of that to keep the winds down from the outside. And we're putting some sort of glass roofing on as well. Wow. So to sort of create that inside outside type dining drinking experience. So, you know, again, we get a lot of nice summer evenings where we are, but we are quite close to the coast, so we tend to get some good winds as well. Yeah. But once we put all this infrastructure, the glass in, yeah, it should give some nice facilities for people that want to come up and either just come and eat, come and drink, and or if you're fishing, you know, have a wander up and have a few drinks on the decking. But it should be nice. Yeah, and we have got Beanie the chef.
Yeah, he's fantastic for sure.
Yeah, mad as a box of frogs, but a good chef.
We're going to try and get a Carpcast social up there, hopefully in September. We need to pick a date between us, but I think there's enough interest already that we're going to go ahead with that. So maybe it's a chance for some Carpcast listeners to come and have a look at the complex, maybe get your name down on the list. We can still can people still apply for an application form and be considered for next year?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we haven't made any decisions yet. I mean, I think there's a few anglers that were a little bit disappointed when they heard it was going to syndicate that were local, thinking I was just going to put all my mates in it. Yeah. I wish I had 75 mates. That'd be nice. I think the reality of it is, Jamie, a lot of my so-called friends are people I've met on the bank, and I've met loads of new friends as well, just wandering around the fishery and meeting new people. We have had a significant interest list put together, but we are still taking inquiries. We haven't, you know, we're not going to make any decisions on applicants until probably November.
Yeah.
And then we'll be asking again. And the other thing, then come November, then we'll be asking people for the joining fee. And I guess at that point as well, it's easy to put your name down. You know, I suspect there'll be an element as well of people that, well, be expressed an actual interest when it comes to paying, might not, you know, might drift away. So yeah, absolutely, please do put your name down. Once it's down, it's on the list. And you know, as we get the membership may well extend, reduce, people might drop out, we're going to play it by ear, but you know, that'll be the list that we go to.
clearwaterfisheries.co.uk is the website. There's the Clearwater Fisheries page on Facebook, which seems to be fairly interactive. Lots of stuff going up there. Anything else you want to add before I let you get back to the sunbathing?
No, it's been lovely to chat finally, Jamie. I guess one other point, we do have now an on-site lodge that you can book on our website. Really nice lodge. It's actually sort of my lodge. So you've got a nice dining room, beautiful kitchen, two bedrooms, two baths. So one bathroom and a separate toilet as well. So anybody that just fancies a weekend away or a week away and a bit of angling on site, have a look on the website and make a reservation.
We get a lot of inquiries or questions on the fan page and stuff from anglers wanting to, you know, the missus has kind of said you can fish if you find somewhere nice by a lake, you know, a nice little lodge or something, then you can fish. We get people asking all the time for that, so I forgot about that. You can now do it at Clearwater. I think the one thing that does come up here, if you haven't already got plans for it, but they always ask, is there a hot tub? maybe a nice one. And hot tub on the decking or something.
Well, yeah, no, there isn't at the moment. We have contemplated the idea. I thought we'll get the thing up and running. The problem with hot tubs is these people like to have a drink in them.
Yeah.
And when you spill alcohol in a hot tub, it turns into a bubble bath, you know, fermenting beer, and you have to clean it all the time. So we'll play it by ear, mate.
Fantastic. Well,
all right, Jay. Well, so thanks very much, mate. It's been nice to catch up. I'll go back to my raving.
Yeah, well, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. Enjoy the rest of your trip, and I'll catch up when we get back. So big shout out to Alex. I'm pretty sure you can tell from that interview, Alex is not in it for the money, as he said, and he's a top guy, and that will be, it'll be a ticket to have in the future, the plans that he's got. I mean, it's a ticket to have now, it's fish to mid-40s, but what a fantastic syndicate and day ticket lakes it is already and going to be, the cafe and everything. And some news hot off the press, I was told this information last week, which is why Alex hasn't mentioned it in the interview. But I'm now told by Kevin Nash that I am allowed to broadcast this information. Clearwater Fisheries is now going to be sponsored by Nash. They're working in conjunction with Nash. They've got loads of plants. Alan Blair and Max Hendry were down there last week. Alan actually caught himself a nice little fully scaled original from one of the day ticket lakes in the few hours that they were there. He had a fantastic burger from the cafe, and it's not like any burger you've had before. They're amazing. It's a proper chef that works up there. And they've got all sorts of plans for the future. They're going to be doing Nash Road shows down there. I think they're going to be doing some underwater filming as the water's so gin clear. Nash have supplied the lake with all nets, slings and mats, so you now fish in any of the lakes because of the KH3 outbreak that's been all around Lancashire, and we'll talk about that in a second. There's two more sort of well-known lakes in Lancashire gone down with KH3. Alex is extremely protective over his fish, so nobody's allowed to bring nets, slings or mats onto the lake anymore, and they've all been provided for you by Nash. You can be able to buy Nash bait down there. It's going to be tackle that they're selling in the shop. And yeah, it looks like a really good partnership between Clearwater and Nash. You might have seen Alex down there last week. Alan Blair down there last week. If you happen to be on the lake, he was there for a good few hours. So yeah, breaking news hot off the press. Nash tackle are sponsoring Clearwater Fisheries, so yeah, big shout out to everyone involved. I think that's a great relationship for the future.
Definitely. Question about that one, bud.
Yep.
Are the lakes going to be getting fed with Nash bait?
I know they're ordering a feed bait to feed the fish with. Gary Bays does a feed bait. It's quite a few people use that over the years that I know all over the country. He does a bait specifically for fisheries. It's not a bait for the public, but I know Dead Man's buys it off him in Manchester, and I know lots of lakes in the south do. But yeah, there will be a feed bait purchased. Yeah,
fish will be getting big then. Remember, it's going back a good few years, but remember what happened to the Essex Manor when they decided that everyone should be filling it with Nash bait?
Yeah. Yeah, and the health of the fish. I know Gary puts some certain ingredients in there that are basically for the welfare of the fish. They're not attractors. They're
just nutrients, aren't they?
Yeah, and you know, I think it happened after the Annie got tethered and really sort of low in weight, and that fish made a full recovery and went super big, didn't it? Up to almost 60 pound.
Yeah, it wasn't far off.
Yeah. Did it ever hit 60? I think it might have done once. Not sure.
I think it was just under. Yeah.
But yeah, it was knackered. It was tethered for a long time. And I think it was like 26 pounds or something when it got rescued. And
yeah, right back down to, I think it was down to over 20s. And then, you know, gradually made its comeback. And
came back fighting on. Fit, super healthy, didn't it? You'd never have known it was damaged. I think it was in a mess. But anyway, yeah. We mentioned KHV then. I've seen the fishery that I actually did a roadshow on many years ago with Nash, Cleveley Bridge. Is it Cleveley Mill or Cleveley Bridge? There's two down there. One's a trout lake. I think it's Cleveley Bridge Fisheries. It's a small complex of lakes, lots of carp in them, a lot of holiday homes and lodges on there. I saw, have you seen these? Is it, who makes these posts? We've seen them on Facebook where they make like a public announcement for KHV.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah, is it some environment agency thing? It just seems to be getting shared around.
Yeah, I think it is. Anyway, I saw one, unfortunately, for Cleveley Bridge. There was also another lake in Lancashire as well. There does seem to be... they're not the first couple of lakes. There does seem to be a KHV outbreak. Dry your nets, you know. Obviously, places like Clearwater have taken precautions. That's the beauty of somebody like Alex running that lake. He's just got out and bought a shed load of protective equipment for the fish so that, you know, he protects his stock, and you know, that's the sort of guy that he is, and he's in a fortunate position to just be able to do that. But as I said, you know, he hasn't bought that fishery to make money out of it. He's done it to make one of the premier fisheries in the north, and we'll do that at any cost. But for lakes that don't have that, please dry your nets out, dry your slings out, get them out in the sun. That's the best way. You know, I've heard lots of mixed reports about the dip tanks and stuff having not very much effectiveness. But one thing we do know is bone drying all your gear out will kill viruses and stuff. So yes, dry your nets, dry your slings, and please be thoughtful. These are our fish to fish for the future. And if you know, if there's mass fish kills on your local lakes, then we'll have nowhere to fish. Simple as that. Or have to wait another 15 years for, you know, new stockfish to grow. So please have a little bit of thought, as it's pretty sad. Another bit of northern news since our last show. Did you see that the Tatton Park Common, Jim's fish was caught?
I did. 57 pounds, isn't it? Looking great, but it's, first reaction when you see that fish, you just think, my God, that looks a bit spawny, but it's always been that shape, hasn't it?
It doesn't look fat. I mean, it did look deeper than when I caught it. I had that fish at £48.
It's nearly £10 bigger, so.
Yeah, it was 7 years ago, but that was the smaller of the two commons. I had the other one at 54 something, which was fat. The other one was called the Barrel, and that always had a massive fat belly. But Jim's fish was the better fish out of the two. I said it when I caught him. It fought like an absolute demon. Big, powerful fish. And it didn't seem fat in any way. It just seemed like the perfect shape carp. And now it's come out that way. I mean, the Barrel died a couple of years after I caught it. And Jim's has just shot through the ranks. It's just got bigger and bigger every single capture. And Rob Allen has had it at 57. Rob fishes Stonies, seems like a decent lad. And I've spoke to him as he seems to be the man of the moment. And he's going to do a... one of our new features, Man of the Moment, is going to do a guest interview for us, so we'll hopefully have that next week on the next show. But yeah, shout out to Rob. I know he did it perfectly legally, fishing the day banks, using a lot of bait. He was baiting up, and I know he put a load of bait in the week before he actually caught it, and he cried. He had tears of joy when he caught it, and I'm not surprised. It must have been some emotion landing that fish like that. Looks like he had his mates around him for the pictures. A couple of videos cropped up around the place. And yeah, shout out to Rob. And we'll have him on the podcast very soon to tell the story himself. Somebody else I spoke to this week. Well, I actually recorded him last week. And it was a fantastic interview reminiscing about old times and stuff. And somebody who actually came to see me when I was in a band many years ago. We used to have a residency at an O'Neill's pub, one of the first O'Neill's in the country, actually, in Watford, when that chain first came about. They seem to be everywhere now, but yeah, they were all about live music in the early days. And we had a residency every Thursday night, the one in Watford. I remember Alan coming to see us around the time of the Shantycock videos. Remember the ton up at Lac de Dare? Remember those videos, Mark?
I do remember those, yes.
Yeah, he was very close with Kevin Maddox, and I had the pleasure of interviewing him last week, and here he is. Feels like I'm in love. Just had the first time I met you. Yeah. Feels like I'm in love. Just had the first time I met you. So we have a guest with us today, joining us on the Carpcast, a man that influenced quite a bit of my younger fishing, somebody I looked up to, somebody I was fortunate enough to meet, somebody I used to buy bait off, a man that used to make videos in the days when nobody made videos. He had a bait company with an incredibly interesting name, and I'm very pleased to welcome to the Carpcast, Mr. Alan Taylor. How are we doing, pal?
Okay, mate, yeah, it's a nice introduction, thank you.
We're stepping up the intro game at the minute on the Carpcast. We need to get enthusiastic about the people, especially the people that have been requested. And I always remember you as a very funny guy. You seem to have a good sense of humour on the bank. You know, the stories, the videos, it always seemed to be a... Well, it seemed like you used to like a laugh, is that fair to say?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I've never... I love me carp fishing, always have done, always will do, hopefully. And but at the end of the day, my motto has always been is it's only fishing, you know, it's not to be taken too seriously. And that sort of even got involved in with me bait and me little business when we had a little dabble at it as well, really. You know, it's important to get it right and things, but at the end of the day, it ain't life or death, as it is. We all do because we enjoy it, really.
That's it, and it gets lost sometimes with the you know, even media like us, podcasts, there's DVDs, there's videos, there's YouTube, magazines. I mean, it was a natural progression, but the reason why everybody fell in love with it is because it's pretty good fun, you know. Carp are pretty exciting to catch, and we all have that thing in common of the, you know, that first time we hook a carp and feel it on the end of the rod and land it, or the excitement of the buzz are going off. Like, that's why we all fell in love with it, you know. Everyone's got that in common, whichever direction you took later on in your fishing life, I guess.
Yeah, and the people you meet along the way all makes it so interesting, and make a lot of good friends, and you have a lot of fun. I have, anyhow.
Can you remember that first carp for you then? I'm guessing it was in the sort of Luton, Leighton Buzzard type area.
Luckily, I live near the canal, so I was brought up with a fishing rod in my hand, really. My dad used to fish, so he used to do a lot of on the Grand Union. There weren't so many carp in there in them days, but opposite me school was quite famous back in the 60s, was Tiddyfoot Pit. We actually used to run cross-country around there, and although you weren't supposed to fish it as a junior member, it was quite treacherous and dangerous. I used to have a little rod stashed over there and used to nip over in my lunch hour and do a bit of guesting from school, really. So that was my first place I ever carp fished, really.
Was that a Leighton Buzzard, Tiddenfoot, was it?
Yeah, Leighton Buzzard. It was the old Quest for Carp, Jack Hilton book. He actually stocked it. They had a big pollution. Pete Frost caught some big carp out there in the 60s. I mean, 30 pounders, which were big for the day. And then it had a pollution, and it sort of steadily come back to life now. It's still run by Leighton Buzzard Angling Club.
Did it they have catfishing at some point?
I mean, if there was a catfish record, I would imagine that would be where, I mean, they're genuine English fish, because Leighton Buzzard Angling Club brought them over from abroad, you know. First stocking was round our way, Tiddyfoot Pit, Faden Lakes and Woburn Abbey and that, and that's just recently done one, I believe, of 90-odd pound, which would be an English, a true English catfish, if there is such a thing as a true English catfish.
Why did that area get a lot of catfish back in those days? I remember, you know, the Woburn Abbey and stuff, and I remember a few articles in the carp magazines in the early 90s.
I think it was Leighton Buzzard Angling Club was one of the first they were a massive club in its day. Actually stocked catfish and Zander to quite a few of their waters. I think you were allowed to import them in them days, or the Duke of Bedford had some over and they had some of them. I'm not quite sure how it works, but they were certainly one of the very first clubs in England to get any, you know, and I think they just got stocked. Like carp used to in them days. They had a few in one of their waters and they got spread to the others, you know, by one way or another.
I lived in, I was born in Dunstable, which is just up the road, but I moved away when I was young and ended up moving back in my late teens, early 20s, which is probably very early 90s. And I fished the Grand Union Canal a bit, actually. It seemed to have quite a few carp in them days. I mean, we never had anything big, but we used to go down there and fish overnight and stuff. It's about the only stint of canal fishing I've ever done, but it was pretty decent, interesting fishing at the time.
Yeah, it's always been good winter water, you know. Never done any massive fish to Grand Union, not around Leighton Buzzards and Tring areas anyhow, but good, because I think the barges and the locks and that, the water was on the move, a bit like river fishing, really. It kept the fish on the move, so you could always get a bite in the winter on there, which was good in the day.
Have you always fished right through the year?
I've never been one to hang me rods up. I fished food over the year, and I mean, a lot of people sort of tend to go, move on to easier waters, but I've always stuck it out myself on where I wanted to fish and what I was fishing for through the year if I was on the lake, you know, and carried on at it, really.
Yeah, and not too far away, I guess, is sort of Northampton and Billing Aquadrome, which has got a hell of a lot of history. I know that's where the CAA used to have their meetings, and you know, which was the sort of smaller part of the British Carp Study Group. You remember the British Carp Study Group, were you, for a while?
Oh yeah, I joined the CAA at its inaugural meeting, which, as you say, was at Billing. I think it was 1974. It was one of the original members, because there was nothing, where, you know what it was like in them days, there was no carp mags or anything, so you were clamouring for any bit of information or anything you could pick up anywhere, really. So I joined that, and then I've been a member of the BCSG, still am, still write for their magazine, The Carper, which I've done for about 25 years now. We do the, like, a rotary letter type thing. I've been doing that now, like I say, for 20 odd years. So, yeah, still going well. The BCSG's even got their own waters now, which was shows how much things have changed.
I joined the CAA, but I was 2 years old in 1974 when you joined it. I didn't realise it went that far back, to be honest.
I feel any older than I am.
Yeah, I joined it in, I think it was 1985 or something. I joined it, but I remember writing the letter to him, you know, telling him what carp I'd caught, and would you let me in, you know, like you probably have to do for the BCSG now. But I was a keen young kid. But I always remember that you know, it was started at sort of Billing Aquadrome, and that a bit of a famous reputation in the 60s, didn't it? Did it have the record one time or something, Billing?
It done a couple of really big fish. I don't know if it ever did the record. I think I'm not really up on the history of it as such, I should be, but it certainly done some big fish. A chap called Bob Reynolds, who I met once, who used to fish down there. Oh, I think there's quite a few people come and had goes at different times, but I mean, the lake they used to catch them out on had a little model railway running around it, and it was boating lake, and I think a bit of it was a swimming pool, certainly is when I went there as a kid. That lake was, there was a bit roped off a swimming pool, and that was the one with the carp in, so it was a bit of a mad place to fish.
Yeah, I've seen it a few times. We obviously, it's a holiday camp as well. There's a lot of caravans on there. And
that's it, yeah.
In the early 90s, or mid-90s, I would say, 95, 96, I was in a band, as you know, because you came to see us in Watford one night with our mutual friend Kev. Sadly, not with us anymore. Hippie Kev, was he called?
We
did a few gigs, actually, at Billing, and I remember sort of hearing the history of the carp in there and having a walk around the lakes, but I never cast a line. I don't know if there's any fish left in there by then, because they were very old, weren't they? It was in the 60s,
yeah, really old, yeah.
I'm sure I did a couple of 30s in the 60s.
Yeah, definitely done some big fish, I think it's got, like most, it's gone through its ups and downs. It's quite it's a massive caravan park now, and I think they've recently had a bit of a sort out with the fishing, and it's got a few good fish in there again now, you know.
Right, that's interesting. So, like, you started fishing the canals, Tiddon, for what was the sort of step, you would say, when you got the buzz for big carp?
Yeah, well, I mean, back in my day, doubles were big fish. You tend to put you know, when you look back through the old BCSG magazines, you had people like, Jim Gibbinson and them sort of anglers, and Jerry Savage and people like that. They'd fish a whole season, be lucky to catch a 20-pounder, and that's how it was. You sort of forget them. So I think the first real out-and-out carp water I fished was Marlborough Pool at Oxford, which meant a bit of travelling, but I mean, we went there because you used to be able to catch a lot, you know, in doubles, really. Had a couple of low 20s in it, but that was the first real carport we fished, but again, I mean, the cars weren't quite as reliable as they are these days. The roads were crap, so we tended and never had a lot of money for travelling, and it weren't the done thing in them days either to travel for your carp. You know, you used to read about Kent and Essex and the sort of fish that they produce, but most of their fishing was done locally, really. You know, Oxford, 30 odd miles for us, that seemed like the other side of the world, really.
And were you getting the info from like the CAA and stuff? How were you hearing of the lakes?
Yeah, CAA, and you know, you did get a few articles originally, you know, in the Course Angling magazines, and then through people you met, the CAA started having regional meetings. You used to get people come along and do slideshows and talks and that sort of thing. There was a bit of more of a grapevine starting up then, you know. There was still quite a lot of secrecy surrounding everything, but you know, you could glean a bit of info if you kept your ear to the ground, really.
I guess that's one of the things modern anglers or people who've got into the sport in the last sort of 10, 15 years take for granted. I mean, you know, if people are talking about a rig, you just go on the internet and there's, you know, pictures of it, YouTube videos of how to make it. Same if you hear of a big fish coming out of a lake. Normally, you only need the name or half the name, and a Google search will sort it out. And, you know, obviously I haven't been fishing in, you know, I wasn't fishing in the 60s and 70s, but I was fishing pre-internet. And then that information used to be so valuable, didn't it? Or those little rumours that you hear. That was all you had, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah. I mean, we used to go down, we first started travelling, the first water we really travelled to, I expect, was Waveney Valley Lakes. And again, it was, it weren't, everybody didn't know about it, you know. It was it was a sort of water that was good, and it was, felt like he was in the know because you knew about it, you know, and the same sort of thing. The rigs and the things you learn down there and picks up from anglers coming from different parts of the country, amazing, really. You take them back home and you just had a start on people, you know, and like you say, it weren't all out there then.
I read something about you talking about Duncan Kay when you applied to fish his water, because he had some strange old rules, didn't he?
Oh, God, yeah, he's a real eccentric character, but lovely man, old Duncan. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was another, that was one of the waters at the time when there weren't that many waters in England with 30-pounders in them, Redmere, Ashley, the school pool, odd ones, but... Yeah, Duncan's was the nearest big fish water to me. Had a couple of 30s in it, and quite famous in its days, it was.
Had he imported the fish then, or like?
Yeah, I think they've come from Belgium, I believe. I think he bought three big ones in.
Yeah.
But they were, like, you know, it weren't illegal in them days. You could get them in with the paperwork, you know.
Yeah, and they're the ones that grew on to be 50s eventually, didn't they, those fish?
Yeah, one of them went on to, well, I don't think that was one of the 30s. The 30s all went on to become, well, two of them went on to 40. One of them died, the leather one died at 33 the year before I got in it. And one of these fish, what he put in himself, went on to be the record, the scaly one. It was 55 pound, I think, because spawn bound. But that was one he stopped.
Even back then, he didn't really like sort of full time anglers, did he? He had some funny old rules, and then. And I read something about the letter you wrote him to try and get a ticket.
Yeah, well, it was really difficult to get in. So many people were after a place, and he could basically pick and choose who he wanted, you know. And he liked to, I mean, there was big fish, all sorts of fish in there, so he even had a few specimen anglers who had tickets as well. But, yeah, I wrote to him, I thought, well, I think we all used to put a few strokes in the day to get in places. I wrote to him, said I worked in the shoe shop and only got Wednesday afternoons off, and I couldn't fish at the weekend because I was in a church choir and sung at the weekends and things like that. And then I went along as a guest with my mate Len Gerd from the Linear Man. They took me along as a guest and I met Duncan. We had a bit of a laugh and got on and all like that, and he said about my letter, it was the best, lies he'd ever heard, you know. He knew they were, it was bullshit, like, but he thought it was funny and he laughed, and I managed to get in, really, which was great, you know.
You're lucky he didn't ask you.
Really.
You're lucky he didn't ask you to sing for him.
Yeah, very lucky, yeah. But he was great. I mean, he had some mad rules. You had to be over 50 before you was allowed a bivvy. You could only have an umbrella up, no sides or nothing. I remember I was down there one day and had a little umbrella up and asleep under my umbrella, and I forget what it was, but I tucked some up under the spokes just to hang down the side to stop the rain getting on me. And he'd come along and set fire to it. I was lying there and I could smell this burning, and he'd set it on fire. It was completely mad. Dinner explosions, fireworks, pyrotechnics, big time. You know, I used to set little traps around the lake, so if you were walking around the lake doing a quiet bit of stalking, all of a sudden a firework could go off behind you, or a crow scare or something, scared the life out of you.
Well, Duncan. I don't know what happened to Duncan. Did he die? Is he still around?
Yeah, no, he died last year, year before. Yeah, bless him. Yeah.
It sounds like he was a real character.
Yeah,
or truly crazy.
It was a great place to be, but it's always scary when he was about. You know, you never quite know what he'd be up to, really.
Was it one of those where when he's on the lake, like, you're all on guard, sort of thing?
Yeah, because he'd come round and, I mean, I've seen him come down the lakes and he'd get a piece of tubing out and you think, what's he doing? He'd put this piece of tube over his shoulder and he'd shoot rockets, you know, fireworks across the lake and try and hit people and get in their bivvies and things, the fireworks and things like that. He used to make his own bombs and all sorts of things, yeah. It's one of his favourite is he used to use this flash, take the old things that go pop bang, you know, like the streamers come out of them, I forget what they call them now.
Yeah, they
used to fill them up with flash powder and tie them to trees with a bit of nylon, so as you walk around you'd break the nylon, they'd pull these flash things, there'd be a big flash of gunpowder and a load of smoke, you know. He used to do them around the lake, and or inside toilet doors was another one of his things. He was one of the CAA men who used to run the CAA meetings.
Yeah. Was it, you'd probably get locked up for that now.
yeah, good chance. Because the other thing he used to do, he was into the old strippers in a big way. He's one of his chaps who fished at his lake, Banger, who's still carp fishing this day, a big, tall West Indian chap. He used to run these exotic dancers, as Duncan used to call them, exotic dance troops, and quite often at CAA and even at the old BCSG meetings, they used to end up with the strippers. There's a famous story about opening night. We always used to have a bit of a drink and that opening night down the lake, and you was allowed to pick your swim fortnight before the season. This is back in the June the 16th time. And you could put something in your peg. I mean, there was all sorts of things. There was people put in them, had blow up dolls. Duncan put a Wendy else up for itself one night and things like that for your opening night peg, and that was yours, so you could bait it up and you knew come June the 16th midnight, that was your swim for start of the season, which was good. One year he said, oh, I've got something a bit special for you this time, and we were all sitting down there having a couple of beers like you do, waiting, and he turned up with Banger, his mate, and they disappeared into the field. We're all sitting there looking for the watches for midnight. We used to get a couple of fireworks or rockets or something that go off to see the seasoning, and all of a sudden there's a mighty explosion in the field, and you see this thing go up in the sky, and they'd managed to get one of these, what they call a Shamuli rocket or something, from the army.
Mm.
It goes up in the sky and it comes down and it explodes. It lets off all these little flares on parachutes. Mm-hmm. They drop slowly down from the sky. And he sent me, it's let this thing off, and that went up in the air, and all you could hear were these police sirens as the old police cars were driving around. And then the music, we had the music started up, and he'd come marching out the field with a banger in tow, and the woman behind him stripping, taking her clothes off, doing a strip tease, and that was the start of the season. So about as mad as he got, I think, Duncan.
Somebody else who was from your neck of the woods as well, Bedfordshire, who was well known, and you became quite friendly with him, I believe, over a long time. That was Kevin Maddox. How did all that come about?
Yeah, same sort of thing, really. Kevin brought up what was, again, in Jack Hilton's book, Quest for Carp, Malin's Pool, which was a day ticket, real rundown day ticket. Carp fishery only had a few £20 in it, but it was a real mess. Mm. It was an old calf, transport calf, in the fishing. Although I'd fished there a couple of times, it was grim. It was really dirty, untidy, overrun with rats. And he bought up the house in the lake with his money from the Carp Fever book, I believe.
Yeah.
And he moved in, and then he started, good old Kevin, you're not going to miss a trick. He was running the day tickets, and he opened it up as a season syndicate as well. I thought it'd be good, you know, when eventually he had big plans for doing it up and getting some fish for it and what have you. So I joined up on the syndicate, and that's when I first met him down there and started fishing there on the syndicate, which eventually he called it Withy Pool, and that was a famous Withy Pool.
Well, there was a bit of controversy over them fish at the time, obviously, with Kevin fishing abroad and stuff. I mean, do you know where the fish came from? Or?
Yeah, I think they were English fish. They weren't foreign.
Yeah,
I think there was all sorts come from lots of different places. I know a couple come from a water. Well, there was two waters that were, I don't want to name names, that were getting filled in.
Yeah.
That people were taking fish out of. Not just in, but other people were taking them. And some come from there. Some come from a chap who still sells fish to this day. Warm water, just grow them on in. He'd grow them on for you if you wanted 20 pounders. He used to use warm water tanks and grow them on. He had a few from there.
It's funny,
yeah,
isn't it?
A mixture, really.
It's funny because these days, you know, people kind of look down on that. We've had all the, you know, I know you know Rob Hales because you fished over some of his waters for a few years, which we'll move on to. But, you know, Rob's really into his fish breeding and stuff, and he's doing nothing that, as you say, people weren't doing back then in the sort of 80s.
Well, this made me laugh because a lot of these people that are decrying all these fish, you know, for whatever reason, from where, fished waters where they'd never see a carp if they hadn't been, you know, people with a bit of forward thinking had moved fish in there. I mean, around Airway, it was just, like a lot of places, there was waters with lots of carp, overstocked waters with carp in, and people used to take a few and slip them in here, there and everywhere. You know, that's how a lot of the lakes now are what they are, and I still see people, you see the fish now and you think, if only they knew, you know, there's people that are decrying it, or they're fishing for fish that have come from somewhere else. I mean, some of the quite big famous fish, like the Oveney fish moved in Longfield and things like that, you know, were moved by anglers. There was never any permission to move them. They were moved to save their lives, and that's what, you know, a lot of it's going on, really.
a lot of the big classic fish, you know. It's the hypocrisy in fishing, it annoys me a little bit, because, you know, like you said, I mean, you know, that those Kevin Maddox fish, some of them were grown in warm water tanks, fed to a certain weight and bore, as were lots of fish back then. You know, there wasn't a lot of fish to go around. There were people in each area or region, as you said, the forward thinkers, moving fish around from overstocked lakes, and we wouldn't have half the lakes we've got now. And, you know, it just the hypocrisy, especially like the absolute keep it real brigade, I only fish for proper ones, you know. I don't know the history of every fish, but I know enough to know that, you know, probably half the fish those people have fished for in the early days were exactly the same as you know, some of the ones they're slagging off in certain lakes, and
without doubt.
And it's a joke, and yet they want to take the high and mighty road of, you know, we shouldn't breed fish or artificially feed them, grow them, and then stock them. And it's been going on since carp first came into this country. People want to buy and catch bigger fish, and it's always been the same, from Donald Laney importing them from abroad, and, you know, it's what everyone did. It's a bit hypocritical, and, you know, you've probably seen more of it and been involved at higher levels, you know, like say you knew Kevin in the early days and stuff. And what was Withy Pool like after that? I mean, there must have been something special about that lake, because they did go very big in there, didn't they?
Yeah, it's very clear. I mean, it's 30 odd feet deep in places, but it was very natural sort of lake. There was loads and loads of P mussel. And then he'd done a stupid or not so stupid thing, depends how you look at it. He put half a dozen crayfish in there one day, you know, and which turned into thousands and thousands of crayfish in no time at all. So the fish did grow well. Now, I mean, I think when we were fishing it, there was about 21 known fish, 14 of them were over 30. The other seven were over 20, I think, which was a high average for water in them days, you know.
Yeah. It's every lake I know that crayfish have gone in, they've made it really, really difficult for the angler, but the fish have gone massive. It makes the fishing painful, doesn't it? Because
terrible at times. Yeah, certain times of year it's almost unbearable, really.
Did you find any solutions?
Well, the only thing really was for hook baits, I found the best thing is either plastic beads or bits of wood. Then even your hair, you had to glue on, because they'd unpick a hair, you know, pick a bait out and take your hair off and slide them off. Always put the free bait in before put your hook bait in, because even a hook bait, a piece of wood or plastic, they'd still have a go at it, you know. And when they get over it, I don't know whether these people say, you know, when the carp move in to swim, the crayfish move out. I've never seen it myself. Once they get on a bait, if carp move in, they just seem to cover it up, it completely. So I don't know so much. You know, I always used to, like I say, use for wood or plastic bait, and then put my freebies in first, and all the crays that were around, hopefully get on the bait and cover it up, and then I'd put my hook bait in, you know, but not a lot else you could do other than that, really. And you'd see them marching off. They'd try and take your rig, your hook link material, they'd chop it or chew it all up. Same with your tubing, just headache.
I've fished a couple of lakes with crayfish, and it isn't enjoyable, really, is it?
But no.
Do you find, you said that they were unbearable at certain times of the year. Did they just get better at certain times of the year for no reason? Or
I think they just like the warmer water, really. They just get more active. I think you get like July and August, and they're at their peak. For whatever reason, them old crayfish, you know. And then you get the other problem, you get the time of year when there's all the small crayfish are about, the soft shells, the carp get on them, and that makes them hard to catch because they get preoccupied on them. So it's Yeah, not a good thing to have in your water, really.
No. How did your first sort of European trips go? I mean, I remember the was it Shanticock hauling that video you did at the time in the mud. I mean, that was a long time ago, and that always stuck with me. That was one of the first videos I ever saw. So tell us about how you first started hearing about the bigger carp in France and some of the early trips.
Yeah, I first heard of the first Paul Regent coach trip. I think it was about 1985 down to Cassien. Duncan went on that. I think he ended up with a story about him and a lot of something to do with an octopus down at the sea or something. Can't quite remember. So I got to know about it. Then I had a few mates who went on them early trips, but I never really fancied it straight away at the time. So a few years went by, and then chap Joe Taylor from J&K at Bisto, he was going out to Cassien with Phil Smith and that. And I went along with him. That was my first trip abroad. That was around 88, 89, I think.
Yeah.
Down at Cassien. And just loved that, you know. It was my first taste, and people, it was a thing in them days, oh, you go over there and you catch them big ones and you'll never want to carp fish over here again, you'll always want to go over there and that. Well, that was just a nonsense to me. It was just completely different, you know. It was like another world over there, and just fishing somewhere completely different. So I was working proper job at them time, had my little bait business as well. So holidays were, you know, I was missus, two kids, I used to go on holiday with them, and so I never had the time or the money really for any foreign excursions. So we used to go once a year, Cassien, and then we started fishing a few places near at home, the River Seine and the Yon, and places around near Montereau, Le Tombe, where the record come from, French record. We started fishing around there a bit, and we go back to them early days, and there was no lakes, well, I don't know what you call them, but lakes owned by English people in France. It was all on French tickets, you know. You bought a French ticket and you fished the river or the lake that was on it, you know. It weren't sort of pay lakes or anything like that. There was no such thing as that. I think the first one must have been Le Cuy, would it be one of the early ones anyhow. I don't know when that'd be, but so we was just fishing where we could, and again the trouble then was getting the information, you know. The language barrier was obviously a major problem, and finding out what fish were where was another problem really. And Joe was a bit in the know, having a little tackle shop and that, and somebody mentioned to him they'd been on holiday and been walking along and stood at this massive lake and by an old church and see a fish jump, and we thought we'd go and have a look. And that's as weird as it seems, but sort of thing we were doing in them days. That was the start of from Shanticock and Lac de Beur, really. Finding that place and starting fishing on there, which was just unbelievable.
Just describe it. I mean, it's I've still never set eyes on it. I've driven past it on that autoroute d'Anglais or whatever it is now to get further into France. So I've been past the signs for the forest and everything, but just describe sort of what it was like.
Yeah, I mean, when we first went down, obviously it's a massive bit of water. It's 14,000 acres, I believe.
Wow.
And you drive from, you know, there's one bit of the lake, and then you drive out and you might drive 5 or 6 miles to find the next village, and then you go down some tracks and through a wood and you find another bit of the lake, and same again, and get round it. You have to drive a lot of miles because you're up and down these tracks and round the lake. So just an unbelievable, really, the size of it. We went along to this little local shop that sold the tickets, and even trying to buy a ticket to carp fish, because they thought everybody who fished it on it was a big pike predator water, really, for the French. lots of boats on it, but everybody fishing for pike and zander, really. Mm. And when we said we wanted to buy tickets for carp, I'd never heard of anybody carp fishing it. Really? Although it had been stocked with carp, they'd never heard of anybody actually carp fishing it, and couldn't believe we just didn't want to buy a cheap ticket because it was cheaper to fish for carp than the pike, really.
Mm.
And then we went away, well, first afternoon we went and put some baits out and we caught a fish, and just unbelievable that you could catch fish in a water that size, really.
Yeah. Was it luck? Did you just pick an area, or was it the area where somebody had seen that
fish?
Yeah,
it was that was the other thing what other people don't realise in them days. There was no night fishing in France, and it weren't just some old boy up the road at the local bailiff. They were gendarmes and garde de pêche, and they wanted to make sure you didn't night fish.
Yeah.
You know, they come around with dogs and guns and things like that. So the first thing was where you wanted to fish was you wanted to fish somewhere safe. I mean, to us,
yeah,
you know, it didn't seem anything wrong with night fishing. You weren't going to do nothing. I mean, if they caught a carp in the day, you know, they would kill it and take it home. You know, that's no doubt about that. That's what they used to do. But I mean, all we might do is, you know, get a photograph, give them a kiss, and put them back in it. Really.
Yeah.
So our thing was, we ain't doing no wrong. You know, we just have to be careful how we do it. Really. So.
Were you fishing at night, or were you reeling in and sleeping?
It got so active at night, because I think the crayfish come out, and then the fish really get on the feed, and you know what it's like when you hear one jump. Well, when you hear them jump in there, it's just like one after another, it's just unbelievable. So, we soon sort of putting rods out at night. We used to keep watch, taking turns on, sitting up, keeping watch. And we had a few close calls doing that. And then eventually they were on us, you know. They knew we were night fishing. They'd come down in the day and try and clock your gear, although we used to try and hide it. We used to try and be clever. We used to get on one of the local campsites and put a tent up and make out we were going to the campsite in the tent every night, and then creep back down the lake and fish and all like that. But there was like a bit of a they were after us, really. They wanted to catch us night fishing. I think they knew we were.
Yeah.
And you'd see them around the lake in the boats in the day and with binoculars out, clocking where you were and what. So when you see them, you know that a good chance you could get a visit. So we used to perhaps move, go off somewhere else, or hide everything up at night, pull off, and then come back during the night. You know, we used to try all sorts. Eventually, they got us. Unbelievable, really. It must have been raining solid for 2 days, and the weather was horrendous. It was a real job to get a launch a boat and get any bait out or anything, but we were on there. We put all the gear on the campsite, even the vehicle. We were bivvied up in the woods about probably 100-150 yards from the water's edge. We didn't put anything out till after dark, and it was such a bad storm. I remember laying there under my brolly, and I used to put a brolly up, no bivvies, because bivvies they used to term as wild camping, and that was even worse than night fishing.
Yeah.
So you just put a brolly up, and I remember laying there and I see all these lights in the trees, and I thought, oh, here we go. And the next thing I know, I can hear the old dogs barking, and the old gendarme were down, dogs and torches and everything, and they'd collared us, you know, fishing at night, and come marching in the trees, turned us out of our beds, took us down to the rods, made us wind in, and weren't a good night, that one. People don't really believe that they'd go to so much effort to catch you. I mean, to them it was a big thing. Remember the old they caught two of us out of the three of us, and Joe done a run up before they got to him. So they took us back to the campsite where they wanted their passports and details and that. And we give them their details and that. They kept going on about the third person. We kept denying that, you know, no, only two, no. And they'd obviously clocked us, you know, so they knew there was somebody else somewhere. So they drove off anyhow, and we're sitting around by the van, and Joe comes out the wood where he's been hiding up, listening to what's going on, laughing and that, like he did. And then we're telling him what the score was and what had happened, and all of a sudden this John Darm and his dog jumped out the trees, grabbed old Joe, "Oh, I got you," and he was laughing, and he put the old walkie-talkies on and called his mates back, and they'd had this plan to hide up, and they knew there was another man and they wanted to catch him, you know.
So and left someone in the trees with a dog.
Yeah. Oh, they was in hysterics, these coppers, because they'd caught us, you know, they were high-fiving and everything. They thought it was great. But,
what was the fine punishment back in them days?
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. It was francs and that. It was about 70 quid, I think, in total. We had to pay so much before it went to court. And then I think there was a fine. So it weren't a lot of money for the amount of trouble they were going to catch you. But the things we used to, just to stay on there, you know, you'd go off in a boat, you'd take a little bit of gear with you. I mean, I heard people go, "How rough it is when, oh, they went to this lake and they didn't even have showers. It's terrible," you know. You'd think, oh, and the dinners, the food they cook us was terrible. And you think, God almighty, we used to go off in a boat, three of us in a boat, the clothes we were in, you know, tin of sausages, them old Savoy sausages and a tin of mixed veg each day. And that was it, really, you know. You used to rough it under an umbrella. You got wet, you stayed wet, and that was it, really. And the mud, you know, if you've seen the old videos.
Yeah.
If you'd remember, the mud was horrendous then, because it's a supply reservoir, supplies the water into Paris. Mm. So a lot of the year, it's full right up to the top. Like if you go in the spring, May time, the water's up in the trees and the woods, so you're bivvied up in the wood. Fishing in the wood, should I say. And then for a field before you get down to the lake, so you're boating towards your rods and getting a boat to get to your rods.
Wow.
And then later in the year when they start taking the water down, it can drop by up to 20 feet, which means the banks go down and, you know, you're fishing on the what's been the lake bed for, been underwater for 9 months, so it's a bit muddy, to say the least.
And the water was down when you had that epic session, wasn't it? So,
yeah.
like, how did all that come about? When did you realise that you needed to take some film equipment over there because the place was a bit special? Did you know you were going to have that sort of session, or how did it come about?
It got to be that when you got the hang of what to do, you know, there's a few more people fishing it. I mean, there was quite a few Dutch. We had Hutchies, a couple of Hutchies field testers. I mean, people were trying all sorts of things. I think Frank Warwick was, I think he clocked Joe's mileage on his van or something from one weekend to another and put a big radius on a French map to try and find it. And
he worked out where it was.
Ireland. Sorry?
He worked out where it was from the mileage in the car.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. He's got a good story for it, old Frank. But we had people following us, we had people... Oh, trying all sorts. I mean, actually, Joe used to put it in the papers. He likes a bit of publicity. And we had some big catches. We had that mega catch. We had 100 fish over 30 pounds in so many days, which was a big catch. But we'd got the hang of it by then. When you got in these new areas, although there's... You know, there still weren't many people fishing it for the size of the water.
Hmm.
You'd get first in an area where there was a lot of that you could get to where there was a lot of fish, and as long as you had the strength and the energy to fish, you'd just catch fish. You know, we used to fish at night. You'd catch fish at night, and we only wanted to keep a few for photographs. It was too much. Keep them all, so we used to client who used to write in the mud how big the one in the sack was. You'd have it like, oh, it's a 36 in here, and then you'd let that go, you'd put in a 38 or 39, and then by the morning you'd end up with your, you know, a couple of your biggest ones left in the sacks. But,
when did you realise there was that from seeing them first fish jump and them first couple of sessions, at what point did you realise how many fish there were? You know, was there one session where you all of a sudden the rods went crazy and you were like, wow?
Yeah, I expect there was, really. It gradually, I mean, it was all sort of new to us, really, I must admit. And well, I think we gradually got a little bit better. There was always a lot of fish. When you got on a big shoal of them fish, that was just phenomenal, mate. It just couldn't believe how many were out there, really. You couldn't get enough bait out or enough rods out quick enough. And that gradually started from the time we first went, which was, I think, an April, May trip, to the sort of first September, really. That was when and the water was dropping. It made the fishing a bit easier, although muddier. But you could, then you got ways to fish around the snags. I mean, they'd just literally gone into fields and sawed the trees down and left them, really. So it was as snaggy as anything. And I think as we got a bit better, it helped, you know. But it was phenomenal fishing.
And whose idea was it to make a video then?
Well, that was Maddox, Kevin Maddox. He hadn't actually, I think the word eventually got out in England or was getting out, and he approached Joe about making it a video. Joe weren't that much bothered because he'd moved on to the Orient then, Joe.
Yeah.
Kevin decided he wanted to do a video on it. Because even in the early days, although a few English people knew about it, it weren't commonly known, you know, not everybody knew about it, so it was a bit of an evener, really. A Dutch and Belgian Germans, they seemed to got out in them countries, you know, one way or another.
So you took the film gear down. Was it in the autumn you went?
Yeah, we went off to the Seine to start with, to do a video on the Seine for a few days, and then we went off to, I don't think Kevin had ever been down to Shanty then, but then we went off to Shanty for the second week. And that's when he made the ton up at back to their videos. That was there, and that was,
yeah. So I remember like the headlines at the time. I mean, you know, foreign fishing and UK fishing, we class it as different then, but I remember the sort of headline at the time was, I think you had more 40s in a few days and Rod Hutchinson had in a lifetime or something. It was, yeah, I remember everyone saying it was a crazy session, wasn't it? I mean, what were the sizes?
It didn't do any in them days. I mean, you were, don't sound right, but you were lucky to get a 50-pounder, because, I mean, there were a massive head of fish, but a lot of them were the same size. I mean, there's so many 30-pounders, and I expect, you know, thinking back now, is you'd probably catch, if you caught 20 fish, I expect a couple of be 40s.
Yeah.
The majority would be 30s, and then you'd have a couple of 20s the other end, really. Get the odd doubled, very odd, smaller one. But, I mean, the average size was, I think, about 31 or 32 pounds, around 31, 32 pounds for what you were catching. But it's some terrific fish, and, you know, what I like, you know, just them, the shape and the breed of them, really, whatever strain they are, it's terrific. You know, that is something, really.
Yes.
Wherever they went or got put or moved to. Because again, there's a lot of them that have been caught from different waters.
Yeah, I bet you knew most of them back then, or you certainly, if you were spending time there, you'd know the people that were doing it, I guess. But we didn't pay too much attention to strains in those days, did we? But
no.
but obviously what we know now, you know, you can see a fish and almost say what region it's come from, you know, because
exactly,
the different types of fish from the, you know, the Royal Strain, you got your Dinks, and you got all sorts of quite recognisable, if you know. And looking back now at some of the big English fish, you know, sort of back then in the 90s, like 100% Shanticoke fish, like you could just see it. And some say it's still going on now to a degree. I don't know how true that is. It's got to be a lot more difficult to get them in the country now with terrorism and stuff, you know. But I don't know. I'm sure that they appear from time to time. But
I'm sure if they smuggle them people in, they'll get a little few fish in still.
Yeah, of course. What were the videos selling like in those days? I mean, was that a nice little money earner, or did?
Yeah, I think they were good, because like in them days, Kevin, he had reps on the road, and he obviously was publishing videos and books. So I think a video, I mean, I don't know for sure, but I think a video used to come out somewhere about £2.
Yeah.
For a DVD, the packet, it come in and everything.
Mm.
And then his reps on the road were selling them for about $14.99, I think they were, weren't they?
Wow.
I remember. So I think they were pretty good at the time, you know, quite profitable. Like some of the books, there weren't many books like there is nowadays, was there?
No.
One cart book a year in them days, you were lucky.
Yeah, there was a lot of people bought the houses from books in those days.
Yeah.
And you're lucky to get your money back these days, I think, if you put a book.
And then he had the bait, obviously, the different bait.
Yeah.
The cane boilers and all the different names and ones they were under. So his little reps used to do all right. I think they used to cover the country selling baits, books, videos. So, yeah, I think he, because he made a few. Clean River he bought out was the company he bought. I think he had Bob Nudd doing the match side of things, and
yeah,
it was pretty good, I think.
He it sounds to me like he was the money guy. He was the person that saw carp angling, you know, saw the pound signs in it a little bit, would you say?
Yeah, 100%, mate. When very shrewd and very clever. When you look back on it, he seemed to be just sort of one of these people that was always a step ahead. I mean, he done like the carp fever book just at the right time, doing ready-made boilies just at the right time, doing the videos, same thing. One of the first people to have his own syndicate, First Lakes in France and things like that. So yeah, he had his finger on the pulse, old Kevin.
Do you keep in touch with him? Have you heard from him in recent years?
Yeah, I speak to him now and again. Yeah, he's not much to do with fishing nowadays. I think he's sold up his French interests in Marpeche and the Labyrinth now.
Yeah.
So I think he's, like me, getting on a bit. I think he's enjoying his retirement nowadays.
Nice. I thought he still had that Labyrinth and that, but obviously I'm out of touch with.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure, Jamie, but I don't think he does now. I think he's all finished up now.
And what's the there's a load of things that I want to talk about. We've been there. His time's flying already. We've been there nearly an hour on the phone already. It does fly when we do these interviews, but.
Yeah.
You've had a load of big fish from the UK as well. I know you fish for Black Eye. You had quite a famous brace out of the Acton Syndicate as well, didn't you? You had both the big ones in a session.
Bill or Ben, one of the big commons at 52, and I had that Italian at 48, which was a big mirror.
Was that like the biggest UK brace ever at the time or something?
I don't know, mate. I think they may have been out of there bigger, but I think they were. I'm not into all that sort of thing, really. But yeah, I think they were a couple of bigger ones. Yeah,
they're tricky waters, those. I mean, you know, it kind of had the reputation of, you know, like an instant big fish water type thing, but it's not really, is it? Beautiful old glacial.
No, absolutely beautiful little place. I fished there was the Upper Acton, but now we had the two lakes, the Big Lake and the Littler Lake, and the littler one was quite a tricky little water. I mean, had some good anglers fishing it. I mean, Frank fished it, Frank Warwick, Wayne Dunn, and it wasn't an easy water by any means, and it was a good one to get your head round. You know, you could get a couple of bites on there in a couple of days. Again, they had restrictions on your time you could do and different things, but it's a lovely place. You drive in that through the gates, you've got a little place, a little estate lake overlooked by a little castle, and really lovely, you know. I really enjoyed my time up there, and it was quite difficult fishing at times.
How did you adapt to fishing in the sill? I bet being a southerner and used to gravel pits and clay pits, it was weird landing your lead on something soft, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely, yeah, different. And but good, I enjoyed it, you know. It was one of them ones, like you do in a lot of syndicates, a lot of people tended to do the same thing, you know, the old, it went up there, and when they got the old Elso spod bucket out, they couldn't believe it. That'll never work, you know, you won't get a bite on there for a week when you finish making all that noise, but you know it works anywhere, doesn't it, you know. So that was the start, and just did things a bit different really up there, you know, just different things worked. And always like to be, I'm quite happy to try something different to other people, you know. It's often the way you get a result. So
we haven't mentioned Elstow, but you were on Elstow in the fairly early days, were you, when it was all still a bit secretive on there?
Yeah, when it was London Brick, we used to there's a couple of tickets going around that used to get used by a few. We used to have a ticket between a few of us. We used to use the same tickets. It weren't proper bay lift. It was just... I was used to doubles water in them days, you know. It was London Brick. And then we had that. Then it was a season or so without anybody controlling it, really. Bit of a free-for-all. We were just a bit worried that fish were getting nicked and moved here and there. I fished it a couple of times, but then when it got to the Friday draw and all like that, again, me working, it just didn't really fit in with it. You know what it was like, a draw on a Friday lunchtime, and if you weren't there, you were wasting your, almost wasting your time, weren't you? Really, so...
How did it shape your fishing? You spoke about the Elstow method, using it on other lakes. I mean, there's a lot of people who fish that Elstow like way, you know, the three rods tight on the spot, the accurate baiting, spotting constantly, that have torn apart lakes ever since. I mean, it was an eye opener to me seeing how people fish and how efficient they were at fishing. And you know, I've watched other people. There was a lot of good anglers on that syndicate, wasn't there? I think.
Yeah, definitely, saw some good anglers, and I mean, it was just practice, wasn't it? I mean, you just went on there, and when I first went on, it seemed a strange way of doing things, but it used to work, you know, and it worked at a lot of places. It was just a lot of people, it was just different sort of way to fish to how people were fishing.
Yeah.
You know, people were fishing... just the Elstow method, as they called it, and it was still successful. It's flogged to death everywhere now, isn't it, really? But it's had its time, I expect, but it was a real good method, that's for sure.
Yeah, it still works. Still works everywhere, you know, accurate regular baiting, hemp and pellet, as it were, the fake corn over the top of it, so many good things that are just, you know, proven sort of methods to catch carp now, I think.
Yeah.
You know, the balance baits and stuff with the corn.
Yeah.
It works. And you say you that's how you fished Acton, kind of like that?
Yeah, they all started off fishing it, because you'd see people who'd go up there and you'd see the marker float come out, and the little bucket of boilers would be out, and 10 or 20 boilers around each marker float, and that's it. And people struggled, you know. The top lake had more fish in, was definitely easier. Mm. And you'd see them down the little lake for a week, no bites, no fish, and you wouldn't see them again. They'd be up the top lake then for a while, and then you know, you'd see the next one come on and do the same thing. So it was just something different that worked, really, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and were you paying a lot of you know, how up were you on rigs and stuff at the time? I know Kevin Maddox, who you fished with a lot, he was sort of very technical. What was your approach to it? Were you constantly thinking, adapting, changing stuff? Or?
Yeah, I've always been a bit like that. I've always paid a lot of attention to my rigs, and I think Wivy pulled the first pace I ever, well, Waveney Valley, where I first found it, you know, the air rig, really, and it, that made such a difference to me fishing. People who are still amazes me when you see some of these anglers and they write about how rigs don't make any difference. Well, I just shake my head. I've always been into me rigs. You know, I used to, in the old days, used to bend hooks and all sorts of things. I mean, back at Wivy, the Wivy pull rig, I mean, that just turned that pace over.
It was a crazy rig, that, wasn't it? Still to this day, I can't get my head around it, you know, that it was...
No, there's so many versions of it as well.
Yeah, I mean, the point was, like, almost facing the wrong way, and, like, how can that ever hook a fish, you know? But, I mean, obviously, yeah. I know how it did. It was almost like the elastication of it, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
It pins the hook in almost, doesn't it? Like, I mean, how did that rig come about? Were you onto it early? And
there was a few. Steve Renyard, I mean, he sort of was fishing down there, and he was doing some, well, we all went to our rigs a little bit in them days, I think, or certainly a few of us down there. I was trying something, I was going a little bit different, really. There was a rig called the Big Hook rig. I'd got a word about how fishing down at Taplow, where they were using a big hook and a boilie, a little boilie.
Yeah.
And we'd been, we were fishing out the Kempish Canal, me and Kevin. Getting a bit mixed up here, different stories, but, and I've been using this thing on Wivy where I've been buying these, there was a Drennan fly hook, a big long shank hook, and I was bending the shank of the hook around a cotton reel, so it was giving it a curved shape to extend the shank of the hook, eventually become long shank nailers, because Kevin was in with Ray Dale at Carper Us, and I was using this and a sort of Wivy pull version on another hook. The trouble, amazingly, the trouble I was having at the time was getting the little stop to the float stop at the top to keep in place. So Kevin said, give me some of them big hooks and I'll get Ray a whip your stop on, and I'll give him some of these Drennan fly hooks that I'd bent around. Then he come back to Kevin, the next thing I see Kevin, and he was fishing with these long shank nailers, which was a copy of my bent hook that I'd been using. So that was how them long shank nailers come about.
I remember when they came out of the Carper as nailers. And yeah, I mean, it sounds, I mean, you had a bait company. It was known as Wacker Catcher Products, the dog's bollocks. Was that kind of your own, the only way you delved into the financial side of fishing? Or?
Yeah, really. I mean, we used to do a bit of bait, do quite a lot locally, really.
I used to buy my bait off you back then. I met you many times.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that. I didn't remember who you told me, but then it all come back to me, the man from Blackpool.
Yeah, Kev introduced us, and we used to buy it between us, the base mix, and we used to sit in Kev's shed rolling 10 kilo boilies in them days with the little gardener hand rollers doing.
Yeah, them were the days. But yeah, I mean, it was them days we used to sell 10 kilo powder and bottle of oil and a bottle of favour, 50 quid, and that was what it was, you know.
Exactly what I used to buy,
I used to catch a lot of fish, and I had different things come along in them days, but I had a steady job, it wasn't a good job, but a steady job, used to pay the bills and missus a mortgage and two kids, and to give it all up and work in a garage mixing bait didn't seem a thing to do in them days, looking back. I mean, we used to do all sorts. We used to make leads at work and coat leads, and I was into a bit of everything, really, just to pay you along the way, keep a van on the road to go fishing, you know.
Yeah. And you now own a complex of lakes, Ecton, I believe.
Yeah, lease them, I do, but run them as carp syndicates, yeah. I've been doing that over 10 years now. I love that side of it, just getting the little fish, growing them on, and stocking them, and seeing them grow on, really. That's me. Never going to be a prolific water. It's a good water. It's nice fish. It's a lovely place. I don't know, you ever been down, Jamie?
I haven't been yet, no. But one of my friends, Matty Lightfoot, you know Matt Lightfoot? He was fishing on there last year. I don't know if he's still got a ticket or not, but he loves it down there.
No, proper carp lakes, trying to keep it, you know, like what it was in the old days, really.
Yeah, he said it's not easy. He said,
he's done all right, old Matt. He shouldn't. A lot of it's down to Pete Olehouse, Pete?
I know Pete, yeah, from Blackpool.
Yes, he's from your neck of the woods, isn't
he? From Blackpool, yeah, I know him.
Yeah, well, he's just started fishing it this year, and just shows you know what you're doing. You know, he's done really well on there this year. He had a 40 and a 39 and a half this week, I think.
He's an exceptional angler, to be fair.
Yeah.
His range fishing, his casting's good.
Yeah.
He used to bailiff the local syndicate up here, The Wire, and then he worked with the England team for a bit, didn't he? With the England carp team here. Yeah, he knows his stuff for sure. So, yeah, I mean, sometimes you look at a place, think, is it really hard? And then you see an angler you know's good go on there and rip it apart. And
exactly. Like, well,
they're just fish, aren't they? You know, it's the good anglers catch everywhere, don't they? So, do you get a chance to do much fishing these days? Is it more about the lakes?
I tend to sort of go mostly abroad when I go now, mate. I had a bit of the old Rainbow Lake bug got me bad a little while back. I was going out there as much as I could. Started having a little look around France, back to a few of the old lakes from the old days that you don't hear much about these days. Still going as much as I can. I don't fish over here so much now, if at all, really, lately, so...
You never fish your own lakes? No.
To be honest with you, it seems a bit weird, but you feel a bit, almost a bit guilty catching fish, really, because you seem that you took money off people to fish them, and you feel like you're catching the fish that they've paid the fish for, really, so... it's a strange feeling, really. I sometimes put a couple of rods in the old landy when I'm going round and do a little bit of stalking, but I haven't even done that for a couple of years now, so no, I don't really.
No, everybody I've spoke to who runs lakes has said exactly that. That's the reason why I asked, because pretty much everybody I know that runs lakes, they just can't fish their own lakes. They just said that something's not quite right about it for whatever reason. They can't put the finger on it, but it's not the same when it's your own. So I'm not sure what that is. But, I mean, where do you go abroad now? Is it all still France? Is it?
Yeah, mostly France. It's finding the time all the time lately again, but keep meaning to go back to Belgium. I've got some good mates over there, and I did enjoy fishing the canals and that over there. I used to go in the winter and do a bit of time on there, so I'd like to do that again. But France, it's just so much out there to do, not just these pay lakes, you know. You go back to the places like the Orient and places like that. There's so many of them.
Did you move on to the Orient after Shanticock?
Yeah, I went and had a go on the Orient, yeah.
And what was that like in the early days?
Yeah, that was good. I mean, the fish weren't as big as they are now, but certainly it was good. We caught a few out of there. It was same thing, really. Night fishing was fun and games, different set of guard to pesh, but there was still no legal night fishing at the time. So ducking and diving. But we done all right on there. We did, long story really, but we went on there to make a video, and I was having one of my best sessions ever, and Kevin decided it weren't the place to be to do one, so we decided to move off we went off to another lake to do something, and yeah, it was a bit of, a strange trip, that one, for whatever reason. But yeah, I enjoyed the time on the Orient.
Yeah, and I know, did you have Eric's at a Rainbow as well?
I've been lucky. I mean, I've always done my winter fishing and I love it, and I still, the time for me to, if I had to pick, you know, any time I'd go when it was cold, and I've fished quite a bit through the winters down at Rainbow. Well, all months really, so I've had some big fish, and quite a few of them in the winter really. So I've had the Eric's common, which I think's now passed away, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I had 10 scale, which was my biggest mirror. I had him in the winter. One called the Perfect Common, 86. Wow. Had that in the winter. I've had some good. I've been lucky. I've had 5 80s from Rainbow now. But
wow.
It's been lucky with the weights, and I've had them at nice times of year.
Yeah, it's difficult getting on these days, I think. If you're not connected with people that run trips.
Basically, you're right.
Yeah, I've never been. Yeah, I mean, I've only started fishing abroad in the last few years, and I'm the same as you. I can't see me doing much fishing in England in the future, apart from, you know, socials with mates and whatever, and the odd time. But it's just a different world. I like the culture, the barbecuing by the lake, the weather. It feels like you're an oldie every time you go fishing. I'm 25 years later than most people for the foreign fishing, but I've been further afield recently, Croatia, the Balkans, Slovenia, and I think that's kind of maybe how France was 20 years ago. There's still not many English anglers over there. Even the locals haven't been carp fishing forever. I think Croatia, there was no one carp fishing before 2000, so it's just kind of moved on a bit. And it still feels, I fished a lake last week, and I was told I was probably the first ever English angler on there, and you know, it was a busy lake. There were plenty of carp anglers on there, but it felt nice. Maybe it felt like, you know, you guys were going to France in the very early days. So it's my own little bit of personal satisfaction or pioneer.
Yeah, it sounds good. No, you're right, that's what it was like. Lovely, really.
Well, we've been chatting for an hour and a quarter, so I'd like to thank you for coming on, reminiscing about your life and about the early days. I have got some quick fire questions I want to ask you separately, but for now I'd like to say thank you very much for joining the Carpcast.
Okay, been a pleasure. Nice to have a chat with you.
Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course.
So a big thank you to Alan. We've had him lined up for a little while, and I finally got to talk to him. And I believe he's not been too well this last week or so. I had a message off his son. Basically telling me that it hadn't been too good, and asking when the interview was going to be out, because he was laid up and would probably want to listen to the next Carpcast. So I'll get this one out as quick as possible today, and we wish Alan all the best. Hopefully you're well enough to get back out fishing again soon. But yeah, I love reminiscing about the old times. A bit sad that Kevin Maddox no longer fishes, doesn't have anything to do with fishing. I know he'd stopped fishing quite a few years ago, but I believe he sold his French lakes and that now, so doesn't seem to have much contact with fishing at all, which seems a bit sad. But there we go. Looks like I did kind of ask the question, is can we get Kevin Maddox on the podcast? I don't think we will, unfortunately. You've got a worth a look, I believe, Mark.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone's noticed this. It, Carpology have kind of revamped their rotary letter, which I know you've contributed to a couple of times. I have as well. Now, instead of having, you know, three or four good anglers, you know, writing about the similar sorts of subjects in one leading on to another, that I'm doing it is via the Facebook message group. So it's kind of a continuous chat with three or four, you know, good anglers discussing certain topics. And, yeah, I was asked to contribute, so I was quite pleased with that. So I went back and had a look at them, and they're quite fascinating, you know. It's just gives it a different, I don't know, a different, I don't know, we say a different feel, a different dynamic to it. So
yeah,
I'll definitely check it out. It's interesting. It's also, everyone's stuck to the phones nowadays on Messenger and everything, so...
Yeah, one of the problems with the old rotary letter is Big Carp that originally sort of came up with the rotary letter idea, and I contributed to that one in the early days, many years ago, probably 15 years ago now. But there were a few heated debates happened in some of them. You know, I know I had a few words with various people, but the problem is you had to wait like a month, sometimes 2 months, for a reply to something you've said, or for you to reply to something they've said. And obviously in the modern age of you know, technology, we can do that almost instant now. So yeah, Carpology have always been they've kept right up to date with technology. We always cite them as one of the sort of more forward thinking magazines when it comes to the little bite sized articles and stuff. And I do like what they do, and I like the idea that they've done a version of the rotary letter that's fairly instant. I know how well our interview with Sean Harrison went down last week. Certainly one of the most informative guests that we've ever had. And I know Sean, I can't remember if I spoke about it in the interview or if it was after the interview, but Sean was telling me all about this rotary letter, and he was saying how much he enjoyed doing it for the exact same reasons. The fact that, you know, it's pretty instant. You're thinking of things because you're seeing what other people are saying, which might, you know, like jog your memory about something. And the fact that it's very instant, it seems like a really, really good format. So yeah, if any of the Carpology guys, Joe or anyone, listen to this, I'd be up for doing one of them as well. I've always got something to say, having contributed to Carpology and to the Big Car Rotary Letter over the years. Yeah, I'm bang up for getting stuck into that. I like a good old debate with like-minded people. So yeah, worth a look. Check out the new look rotary letter in Carpology. It's another worth a look here, Mark, but it's maybe a little bit ruder.
I think it's certainly worth a look. I think it's simply lovely.
Simply lovely. And if you've heard that saying, you'll know exactly what we're talking about. If you haven't heard that saying, then maybe we can't explain it. But it's a man from your neck of the woods, isn't it, Mark? A Yorkshire man. And
yeah, all the best things come out of Yorkshire, we all know that. And I just get these messages every now and then. I don't know where they actually originate from, other than a friend of mine. They just seem to like kind of go viral without actually having a base or a website or even a Facebook or Twitter account anywhere. But let's just say they're downright rude, filthy and bloody hilarious.
Yeah, it's a Yorkshire man, and these, I've seen people like stag knights walking around Blackpool in t-shirts that say some of these catchphrases, and they're simply lovely. Plenty in the tank, sir. He starts everyone. So basically, it's a collection of videos from that particular week. They seem to come out every Friday. They've got a date on the front of them. It's like a picture of a pigeon, like the back of a pigeon's head on the front of these videos. And it's a compilation of just viral videos that have gone around the net, but some quite rude ones. Seems to be lots of Yorkshire lasses sending in their rude videos or naked dancing or on some of it's just downright funny. You know, there's this hilarious one last week with a chicken walking about in a set of Nikes. I don't know why it's funny. It's just one of those silly viral videos that go around. And this Yorkshire guy does a collection of them. He starts every one of these, they're like video podcasts almost. He starts every one of them off with a weekends here, I hope you've earned a few quid. Like, I hear people saying these catchphrases all over the place, and I never knew what they were. And somebody started sending me them about 4 or 5 weeks ago, and I've not had last week's yet. But all I'll say is they come to me on WhatsApp. There must be, they seem to go viral on WhatsApp. And considering there's no Facebook, no Twitter account, no nothing, everyone seems to have them.
Yeah, you're about to get one through on Messenger as well now. So yeah, that's what I'm telling you about earlier on. And anyone who knows the phrase, not the conquer, will know what I've just sent you.
Okay. Yeah, that's as much as we can say. Even though we have an explicit rating on this podcast, I still think this worth a look's a little bit too far to go into detail. But yeah, they're simply lovely. Is all I've got to say about that.
You don't want me to play one out then?
Yeah, no, probably not a good idea. We've been doing these little quickfire questions. We did your quickfire five before, Mark. There are actually 10 questions. 5 of them are quickfire, and 5 of them are just silly little things, or not silly little things, but sort of getting to know celebrities of the angling world a little bit deeper. And I had the pleasure of speaking to Johnny Mack earlier, the Kent geezer that's now an Essex geezer because he's living in Essex. So. Here's John Mack's 10 questions, including his quick five. What is your go-to rig?
My go-to rig? Johnny Mack's go-to rig? Whoa. Listen, there's only one rig I've used for the last 17 years, and that is the multi-rig pop-up. But you can use it for a bottom bait as well, but yeah, multi-rig.
Or the Johnny Mack rig, as it was called.
Some people know it as that in years gone by, but it's evolved since then, only because I obviously sort of popularised it, as it were, sort of in articles. But yeah, the multi-rig, Johnny Mack rig, whatever you want to call it, yeah, go to anywhere, never fails.
Name me an essential meal that you always cook on a long session.
Oh, well, I've got this one sort of dinner that Sean put me on to, my sort of partner at the bait firm now, and this was before when we started fishing together many years ago, 10 years ago, and he put me on to this sausage and rice sort of thing. It's basically bachelor's savoury rice, curry flavour. Fill your saucepan up pretty much 3/4 full, which is more than what they would say on the packet. Slice up a Matteson smoked pork sausage, chuck that in, chuck the rice in, can chuck it in when it's cold, just get your stove on, whack it all on, and then about a third of a chorizo sausage all sliced up as well. Boil it down for about 20 minutes till it gets to a consistency of a casserole, and that is a banging meal for about £2.50, £3.
I like that. That's an original one. I've not had that one before. Our last live gig or club night you attended?
Last live gig or club night was Friday night at the Firkin in Hornchurch. Banging.
Banging. Full of Essex birds. You traded across the border, did you?
Yeah. Well, like now I live in Essex, you see. I'm out in Essex.
In Essex, oh my word, gone to the dark side from Kent.
I've gone to the dark side. I've gone to the dark side, and a lot of my mates have banished me from any inner circles now. But do you know what? There's life after Kent, and it certainly is wicked in Essex, I've got to tell you.
Okay. What do you listen to on the way to the lake? Is it a song, podcast, something to put you in the mood for the session?
Normally I just put my favourite radio or music is house music, whatever genre of house that may well be, and there is a radio station called Select UK Radio. It's a pirate in London, but for all you people listening, you can get Select Radio on your app. So go to your app store, Select Radio is what it's called. Get the app, you can play it, put your phono lead through your car anywhere, whether I'm going up north, down south. When you're out of range, obviously, of London, and I'm travelling to France even, I can listen to my pirate station through the app, Select Radio. It's banging.
You put me onto that one a year or two ago. Yeah, I've got the app on my phone as well, so strongly recommended. You catch a special fish or PB, what song would be in the car on the way home?
I don't have any particular song, but I can relate to it in only a way that obviously is such an emotional feeling. And in the past, I could just put the radio on, and there might be one song that you'll flick through and you'll pick up, whether it be on like Radio 1, Capital, Kiss FM, or whatever. So yeah, just anything really. Don't mind a bit of rock as well, you know, like a pop band. So anything really, just to sort of get your blood pumping really. But yeah.
Straight Point or Beat?
Straight Point or Beat, Straight Point for me.
Pop Up or Bottom Bait?
Ooh, you know me, everybody. Come on, it's a pop up, isn't it?
Stick or bag?
Ooh, stick or bag. Not that I use any, but occasionally it'll be maybe a bit of stocking with a bit of gear in it. So not even a stick, because I don't have a stick gear, but yeah.
Yeah, but I'm guessing your answer's none, really, if you pop up angling normally.
Yeah, neither.
Yeah, okay. Braid, mono, fluoro for both mainline and your hook link.
Braid, mono, fluoro, what was the question?
For mainline, preferred one for mainline, and same for your hook link.
Mainline will be mono.
Yeah.
Love the stretch in the mono. And then hook link would be coated braid.
And lead arrangement, inline, clip, or sort of heli, chod type setup?
Well, I always use a lead clip, and I always make sure the lead's come off no matter what.
Sound, mate, that is it. Thank you very much for the questions. Okay, we'll be doing those every week. Big thank you to John Mack. We'll have a different guest every time, just giving you a quick 5-10 questions. I believe you've got a worth a look, a true review, Mark.
A true review? Have we got a jingle for the true review, or are you going to sing it again?
We have a jingle.
True review.
Go on, what is it?
GRC have come up with a nice new bivy. It's a Defender Peak bivy. You know, the Defender's back. And this one, it's for your kind of... yeah, it's kind of like entry, mid-level sort of range. Yeah, I believe you're going to see it in the shops for about £170. But it's a Defender Peak bivy. You've got your, for the stats on it, the 5000HH210DPU coated polyester, whatever the hell that means. Not the technique.
I wouldn't know.
Basically, it's got thick seams, it's waterproof, it doesn't let water the elements out. Yeah, it's got reinforced pegging points, the peak for extra protection of the front, roll back front option with buckle retainers. You can have your door like a letterbox for those who just like peering out of the door over the lake. Different door options. You've got a mozzie mesh clear front, or just a normal solid green front if you need a bit of privacy for whatever you want to do in there. You've got front and rear mozzie vents, velcro rod retaining straps, a lightweight velcro in ground sheets, and tension bars are included. I've done a night in this bivy, and I will say it's a nice cracking piece of kit for that sort of price point. The other thing I will say, go on, sorry.
Is it a pram hood type bivy?
It is, yes. Yeah, it's a pram hood type bivy with the peak on. It's peak, yes. It's not inventing anything new, it's just carrying on the theme a little bit more, and providing a product which at that price is a cracking thing. The only thing I will say is I did a night in it with my monstrously wide bed chair. It was a little bit tight, but for normal sized people and normal sized bed chairs, it's a perfect piece of kit. Very, very sturdy and rock solid as well. I was quite impressed with it. So that is a quick true review of a GRC Defender Peak bivy, available in your GRC retailer.
Excellent.
Did that sound good?
Yeah, I'm off to Croatia next week again. You remember Scottish Drew from pretty much every Carpcast social we've ever done?
Drew, he caught the first ever fish on a Carpcast social as well.
He did, yeah, we had it on video. There is a video on the Carpcast YouTube page. Yeah, Drew, top lad. I've seen him a few times since. He's been up to Blackpool and that. And he's going to come with me to Croatia. We're going to go back to have a look. We're going to Slovenia and Croatia. Going to hopefully get 2 or 3 days on Lake Bled. I've still not got a picture of a big carp with the church in the background. But we're actually going back for the to look at a couple of lakes. We're doing the Croatia trips and Slovenia trips on VIPcarpholidays.com. We're taking bookings from next year, from sort of end of April next year. I think I've had 7, maybe 8 serious inquiries already. We only mentioned it on the last podcast, and it seems like people really like the idea of going over there. A lot of people, in fact, Lee, who came on the Church Lake trip last week, he seems really keen, and he kind of summed it up. He's like, France used to be an adventure. You used to have to plan it 6 months, 12 months in advance. You'd get excited. Now basically you can decide you want to go to France next Friday and go. You know, there's that many lakes, it's so simple and comfortable. Lots of English owned lakes, and it's not quite got the adventure that it once had. And you know, there's a lot of people out there looking for a new adventure, and without doubt the Balkans, whole area, the fishing is amazing, the climate's amazing, the scenery is amazing, the prices are pretty good. You know, it's much cheaper than Western Europe. It's a bit of a drive, but we're catering for that. You know, we're going to, you'll book your own flights, get in there, and we'll provide everything once you're there. Pick you up from the airports, provide the equipment, the bait, the local knowledge, the lakes. There's so many lakes to choose from as well. So I'm going over there next week with Drew for sort of 10, 12 days to have a look at a couple of lakes that I haven't seen yet, so that we can finalise prices and everything. If you are interested, get yourself over to vipcarpholidays.com or send me a message, and we will I'll know exact prices and exact lakes, or give you a choice of lakes by next week. But what we're recommending, if you really want to fish Lake Bled's quite tough because of its early mornings, late nights and no night fishing. So it's kind of getting up at 3:30 in the morning. You're fishing till 11 o'clock at night, and you're getting 3 or 4 hours sleep, then you're back on the bank again. So, and it's a big old lake, it's probably 300-400 acres, so location's an issue. So having a guide, somebody that will make sure you are on the fish, someone that will have accommodation ready for you, makes what is a difficult task much as easy as it can be. And we're recommending that people either book like a 7-day trip and have 3 days on Bled, and then sort of 4 days bivvy fishing on a very well stocked gravel pit, or we've got natural lakes as well. Or you do like a 10-day trip, do 3 days on Bled and then 7 days on a gravel pit, whatever. We can accommodate anything you want, basically. If you want to do the week on Bled, that's fine. But you do need to take time off in between, because you just can't physically function for 6-7 days with having that little sleep. But there are ways around it. I have a fantastic angler, Gasper, who's Lake Bled's his local lake, and he's a really accomplished angler over there. So have him as a guide over there. I'm going to be living over there from May till October next year, and I'll be fishing with you on the trips. All I can say is it's the best place I've ever visited, for not just for fishing but for scenery, holidays. You know, there's tons and tons of festivals in Croatia. You can mix it in with a bit of partying if you want to as well. And we'll make it as easy as possible for you with accommodation, with lakes, with everything. So vipcarpholidays.com, or drop me a message, express some interest. And I've even got somebody trying to book for 2019 already. The interest has been crazy. Yeah, the interest has been really, really good. So I'm quite confident we can make this work, which is great, because I want to go and move to probably one of the best places I've ever visited. I was chatting with Kevin Nash last week, and I was saying to him, like, I've always fancied living abroad, just for the climate, and living somewhere that's a bit cheaper to live in England, you know, is obviously a no-brainer. But all the places I've wanted to live have got no carp fishing, and all the places that have got really good carp fishing, I don't really want to live, you know, places like France and stuff. this is the first place I've ever found that is by far the best place I've ever visited, even without the carp. And it's probably one of the most upcoming carp stocks in the world anywhere. The climate's just perfect for growing carp. The strains are really fast growing over there. They look quite nice as well. They're not horrible, I don't think, anyway. There's plenty of scaly ones and stuff. And I mean, to give you an example, just one of the lakes that we fished last time we were there, 3 years ago, I think there were 5 20-kilo fish. They're over 120 20-kilo fish now in 3 years. That's how the fish are growing. They're putting on 5 kilos a year in some of the gravel pits in Croatia. It's crazy. And they've all got 70s and 80s in now. And it's getting bigger every year, and I don't think they've hit the peak yet either. Most of the lakes have only had carp in like 12, 13 years. The gravel pits in Croatia I'm talking about now, obviously there's natural lakes like Lake Bled are 3,000 years old, and there are plenty of natural lakes as well. But they're all beautiful, mountains in the background, very green, a lot of these places as well. It's just stunning, and barbecues, beers, general enjoyable holiday stuff will all be catered for. So it looks like it's going to work out really well, and there'll be lots of carp casts from Croatia next year by the look of it. So yeah, vrpcarpholidays.com. If you don't want to travel quite as far, you want to fish in the UK, then you need to check out the RH Fisheries Lakes. We've had Rob on a couple of times to discuss the lakes, and whatever you think of the big rig saga, some of his day ticket lakes and syndicate lakes are some of the best in the country. You can a couple of lakes have got holiday swims on if you're just looking for somewhere to go for a weekend, somewhere different. The Sitch has a holiday swim on there. I know Western Park also has a holiday swim, although that's booked up quite a long way in advance, that one, as it's so stunning. But yeah, you can just book the holiday swim. You don't need to be a syndicate member. You can apply for syndicate memberships. The Sitch, we will be doing a Carpcast social on there in April next year. I do have that lake booked. It's in the middle of Shropshire. It's got surrounded by a forest. It's an old silty mere. It's very stunning, and it's got hundreds and hundreds of fish. And there's a very good chance of every single person catching on the Carpcast social. But you can also join it. The fish are growing huge in there. The fish are nice. They're packing on a good few pounds a year, it's certainly worth checking out. You can apply at rhfisheries.co.uk. Obviously, he's got the Acton syndicates as well. Acton Top Lakes got like 2040s in there, or 2240s, I think Rob said on the last podcast. Lower Lake used to have Bill and Ben, was it, in the 250s? One of them's definitely gone, the other one could possibly in there, but there's a load of really old history fish in that lake as well. And again, they're stunning. They're in the grounds of a castle. The whole of Shropshire's stunning. All of his lakes are pretty damn amazing. Then you've got the Monument. Monument 1 and Monument 2, which are some really well run fisheries. I don't think I've ever seen a better run fishery. The fish get rested every other day. It's 36 hour sessions that you book on there. You just ring up, book on, and away you go. So he offers some of the finest fisheries in that part of the world. If you're interested in fishing in the Midlands, not travelling millions of miles, then I would certainly check out. All the info can be found at rhfisheries.co.uk. Anything else, Mark?
Ooh, I can't think. Yeah, I just kind of drifted away in my own little world while you were doing your bit. I'm looking outside at this lovely weather, thinking those calf have got to be up for some mixes somewhere today.
Yes, I would like to be fishing this week, but this week's going to be preparing. I hadn't actually planned to go to Croatia. This has come out of the blue because I need to get back there to set some things up for next year. So, yeah, it's thrown a spanner in the plan. I hadn't budgeted for it. I can't really afford to go, but obviously you have to speculate to accumulate. And if I want, you know, a life living out there with some of those fantastic fish, I kind of have to do it. Drew really fancies it. He's actually cancelled another holiday to come with me on a bit of an adventure. So we're going to go and do the, I think it's 24 hours travelling, basically. We're going to drive between us and try and do it without stopping, which we should be able to do. Drew's a crafter. He's driven from Scotland to France himself on his own fishing before now, so I've got every confidence we'll have a great trip. Get a few pictures for promos for the holders as well. Go and see Gaspar over there, and I'm really looking forward to it. So as much as I want to go fishing this week, it's going to have to be put on hold, I think, until next time. So yeah, if we've got nothing else, that we've run out of things in the tank. Simply lovely.
Nothing in the tank.
Yep, until next time, we'll see you then.
Check out the website at www.thecapcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.